Brian Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather. The bell tolls. It's
Noonan o'clock.
I hear voices in my head. They talk to me.
You're stealing my pot pie.
Bernard, did you rip up the store today?
Yeah, he's got the salt cabinets.
No, Mama, I was a good employee today.
Well, son, I said, son, let me get myself a daiquiri over here. Run down, pick me up a moon pie and an RC Cola. I'm going to meet you down by Kirkwood through the wash.
You could say I'm a little bit crazy.
That is the most sinister call laugh that we've ever had on this program, Cody. You need to isolate that laugh.
Noonan o'clock.
Boy, I tell you, it gets out of hand in a hurry.
Well, it's the big show. Yes, it's a big, bad show tonight. Oh. Yeah, it's the big show. Come on, crank it up and turn on all the lights. Oh. Well, get ready for something that you'll never know.
Good evening. Welcome. Glad you're with us. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase studio on a bustling Michigan Avenue. A beautiful Sunday night in Chicago. Happy Easter if you're celebrating Passover. Roger, what's the official end date of Passover? Did we miss that already?
No, I believe this is the last weekend also.
Last weekend of Passover as well. Yeah, well, if you're celebrating Passover, enjoy your Passover. Big day. And if you're just celebrating Sunday or you're not celebrating anything, well, we're glad you're here. Big show planned. Oh, lots of updates, lots of things to cover. The fact that I still can't see Roger is troubling, but I'm used to working.
The monitor's out again?
Yeah.
Because it was working right after you left last week.
Of course it was. Of course. Let's leave out any conspiracy theory about how this show is the hindteat of the station, and so technical issues are not really paid attention to. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about right now from 6 to 9, and man, what we've got planned, I can only describe as, we'll figure it out when we're done. 312-981-7200, that's the number, though. That's how you get involved, and it is always more fun when you're involved. Cody, of course, does not work weekends. So when you call in tonight, you won't be talking to Cody. You'll be talking to the very talented Lise Graham. She is with us tonight. We're happy to have her here as well. So the rules are still the same. To get to me, you got to be nice to her. That's how it works. That's also the text number, 312-981-7200. And if you want to get a hold of us via social media, it is Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. So there you go. How accessible can we be? I don't know where to start, Roger, except to say, well, first of all, let me say this. Congratulations. Roger bought a new car this week. For those of you who don't follow Roger's exploits on social media, because he was all over it. That's always a big thing, buying a new car. First of all, it's a huge financial undertaking. And secondly, there is an emotional part to it that some people don't quite understand. If you get attached to a car, which I know you been through hell and high water in that car that you got rid of, or hell and high snow, however you want to put it. But it's a big thing. So congratulations. You got a brand new ride.
Yeah. Did not go for a used or a lightly driven.
Oh, sure.
Car.
Gently used.
Gently used. Yeah. No. Went stayed with the Accord. It just felt comfortable. As soon as I sat down in the new one, it felt like I was still in the old one.
I was going to say, because that was the biggest adjustment when I bought my new car. My old one, my seat, well, your seat curves to your body. So
sure.
You're used to it, and you're used to that kind of seat. And my new car, as much as I love it, it took me a little while to get used to having that different kind of seat.
Uh-huh,
so I can see, and I switched makers and stuff. So
well,
for you to stay
change,
in the
then.
Same, yeah, for you to stay in the same one makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it was like they just maybe put a new paint job on and fixed everything that was on the old car. And the new one, it just hasn't changed in 15 years.
More bells and whistles than last time?
Yeah, the electronics.
Sure.
Definitely electronics. Okay. Still, I'm not looking at the backup camera because I can see out the back window.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. Yeah. Let me tell you this.
Okay.
From a guy who never had a backup camera, now it's like I cannot park without it. I love the... And for the first month, I was like, this backup camera is driving me nuts. I can't get... Oh, man. I love it. It is one of the greatest inventions. And I have not run over squirrels or anything. Tricycles, nothing. Everything behind me is safe and sound. Okay, that's what I enjoy.
Good. Because mine I don't trust. Because,
no trust it.
Well, I pull out of our parking lot
dude,
at home.
Especially
and
in the city. It's great.
Well,
because
in the city, maybe.
Pylons and cars and bikes and goofballs. You've got to use that backup camera. It is the key to modern urban driving.
All right, I'll get used to it.
You will. Trust
slow
me, you
but
will.
Sure. I'll
don't
get used
be
to
that
it.
Old man. I'm never going to look at a backup because if I'm backing up, I'm going to put my head over my shoulder like my father did and his father before him. All the way back to the Model T, we turned our heads and looked over our shoulder. And if it was good enough for pioneers, it's good enough for me. No, man, embrace the technology. You paid for it. You
That's
might
true.
As well use it.
Oh, man, did I.
Yeah, you paid for it. Go on. Now, did you get yourself a satellite radio in there?
No. Just the regular. I just went low key. The
A-track?
Base model.
Did you go A-track?
No, I've still got a CD.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll bring my portable.
We went way back.
I'll bring my portable A-track
all
in
right,
and set it up. Plug
right,
it into
good.
The cigarette lighter.
The cigarette lighter. Yeah. Do you have a cigarette lighter?
Yes. There's
really?
Two of them, in fact.
Wow.
Well, they don't call it a cigarette lighter. They now call it the electrical adapter.
Yeah, but did yours come with an actual lighter?
No, mine did not. No.
I've got the hole. Yeah, I've got the holes to plug things in. But
yeah, we got two of those. I got one lighter. In the front, and then one in the armrest
beautiful,
in the middle.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and then Bluetooth. Oh, that's the one I've been playing with.
Yeah,
with
that's
the phone because
oh,
I've
sure.
never used Bluetooth before.
Well,
so you know, I'm way behind.
You're
times.
Mr. 1964. You got to come into the at least to the
90s. Yeah, I'm trying. Well,
it's
I have
gonna
done
be fun.
It.
The Bluetooth you're going to enjoy because then you can talk. I know people will say, well, you're still distracted because you're actually talking where you should be. Yeah, but you don't have your phone in your hand. You're not doing any of that. You're talking right through. It's perfect.
Yeah, I've been calling people just so I can use it, like for no other reason.
Well, it's like the first time they put phones on planes and people are, guess where I am?
Yeah, right. And that's exactly what I said every time I called someone.
Guess where I am?
Guess where I'm calling from?
You're in your car. Just like people for the last 15 years. You're in your car. Congratulations. Welcome. Welcome to the new world order. You can now call from your car with Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
very
you,
good.
Sir.
Very good.
Yeah.
Later on in the show, after 7 o'clock, we are going to regale everyone with the holiday classic, The Saddest Christmas Story Ever. I know it's hard to believe, but people have actually been asking if I was going to do my saddest Easter story ever. And so, yes, we will deliver that after 7 o'clock. Karen Conti will be
I've
here
been
after
waiting
8
all
o'clock.
Year for it.
I know. People, you know, I took, and I'll talk about this when we, after 7, but I took a little beating today from some of my family members.
What?
Yeah, because of The Saddest Easter Story Ever.
So, oh, come on. If they can't support you.
Well, listen, they either caused it or lived it. So they, you know, I said, is anything I say false? No.
No.
So we'll leave it at that. All right. Now, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, as you remember, Roger, last week, and I don't, now in hindsight, when I say this, it is not hyperbole. I was on the brink of death last week. Would you concur with that when I was on the show?
I don't know how you made it through the show. Seriously.
Well, to be quite honest, I don't either. Because the minute, well, I'll tell you what it is.
Yeah.
The red light goes on and the monkey dances. That's how
true.
It works.
You're programmed.
Yes, I'm here. All the bright lights, which again, I think I'm getting some sort of skin cancer from the bright sunlight they have piped into the Allstate Showcase studio. But I'm not going to sue. Don't worry about it. The point being, we're programmed. The show must go on.
Show
right?
must go on.
So I'm here. The mic goes on. The monkey dances, like I said. The minute the monkey left the studio and got behind the wheel of his car, the monkey did not feel good.
No.
The monkey was having a hard time. But I'll tell you what happened. And it's, well, it took a very unexpected turn. So we'll get to all of that and more. Last week, if you were listening to the program, and if you weren't, shame on you, really. We're not here just for our health. We're here for you. I mentioned that I really shouldn't have been here, and I'll spare you the whole details of last week's show because you can go back and listen. But long story short, I got an infection in my toe in the Dominican Republic, which got really bad the day before we flew home. Last Friday, I went to urgent care, and they gave me some antibiotics. So by last Sunday night, I had been on antibiotics for 2.5 days. But my leg, as Roger can attest to, was probably 2 to 3 times its normal size.
Mm-hmm.
And a really icky purple. And I know icky is not the most mature word to use, but I think in this case it fits. It was an icky purple. So I talked about it on the air, and somebody texted in and said, hey, I think you got cellulitis. And other people were chastising me for not taking care of myself, even though I had gone to the doctor and I was at that point taking medication. So I hadn't blown it off. But I was like, well, part of me was like, I thought, well, the medication will take some time to take effect, right?
Two and a half days, probably
not enough. I was supposed to be on the meds for 10 days. So I thought, all right, I still have time. But I was really feeling bad, you know, like feverish and all that. So anyway, long story, I'll try to condense, but really I've got 3 hours, so why am I in a rush?
I don't know if Karen will give up her hour for your story.
I locked the door. She comes in, she serves at my pleasure, let's be honest. So I get in the car to drive home, and I'm feeling really bad, like lightheaded and sleepy. And to the point where I call my wife and I go, I'm afraid I'm going to have trouble getting home. Just so she knows, if she sees on the news at 10 there's a big fiery crash on the Eisenhower, it could be me. I get home and I'm just like, I got to go to bed. I walked in, I'm down, and she's now a friend of my daughter's. Her father is a paramedic, and they listen to the show all the time. There's the neighbors, and thank you very much for that. So Vicky, the mom, sends Debbie a text and says, hey, we were listening to the show, and Tom said if Brian's leg is that swollen and hot, he needs to go to the emergency room right now. He can't wait to go to the doctor tomorrow unless his doctor's appointment is first thing in the morning. But if it's any other time of day, he needs to go now. Now, as you know, Roger, I had not made a doctor's appointment for Monday. I was planning to go to the doctor on Monday, but I figured I would get up and call my doctor, and they're pretty good about sliding me in.
Sure.
So I figured at some point Monday, I was going to the doctor. But it wasn't going to be first thing in the morning.
No.
Because the way I felt, I wouldn't have woken up first thing in the morning. I would have woken up early afternoon.
I
drag myself out of bed, because now Debbie comes in, and my leg is just radiating heat. And she's like, you have to go to the emergency room. I don't want to go to the emergency room.
And you
have to
totally
go to the emergency
out of it.
Room. I'm completely gone. But I get out of bed and I get dressed and we go to the emergency room. Now, I won't say the hospital because they gave me good care in the emergency room. But initially, I don't know what was going on in my town last Sunday night at about 11 o'clock. But everybody in town was in the emergency room. It was unbelievably crowded. Now, I haven't been in an emergency room in a long time. I don't know if that's the normal thing on a Sunday night. But man, oh man, it was crazy.
I'm trying to remember, the weather was not too bad.
No, the weather was nice. Okay. My thinking is it was the last day of spring break for the schools around town.
Yeah.
Maybe kids didn't want to go back to school. I heard one woman just complain she had an upset stomach. There were people, but there were some people who sounded like they had real illnesses. But at this point, I'm half in a bag. I'm just sitting there like a zombie. So I finally get back into the triage portion of the emergency room and take my shoe and sock off. And I don't know if it was a physician's assistant, if it was a nurse. I'm not sure who the gentleman was, but he looked at my foot and goes, oh, you're a keeper. So at that point, I'm figuring, well, I'm probably going to stay. They quickly, now I've heard them tell other patients, we don't have beds in the other part of the emergency room. There's other people sicker. You're going to have to wait, blah, blah, blah. We're going to move you into a bed right away. Okay. So just visually, something looked askew. They get me in there, and the doctors come in. They look. They're asking me all these questions. The first question they ask, obviously, is if I'm diabetic. Because if you're diabetic and your foot looks like mine did, nothing good is going to come of this. Yeah. Thank God I am not. So they're asking me questions. They're doing all this. They're asking if they ran an ultrasound about blood clots, which they had. There were no blood clots. So they start me immediately on IV antibiotics. And then at about 4:30, 5 o'clock, they tell me they're admitting me. And I'm going into the hospital.
Now, this is in the morning.
This is Monday morning,
right.
So I've been in the emergency room since 11. Now it's 5. I finally get up to the room at about 6. And then it's just the hospital, which is a nightmare.
Right.
You know,
I know.
I haven't been, it's been 7-8 years, yeah, since I was in the hospital. And, but they immediately put this antibiotic in And I've never had a sign. You know, they tell you, listen, if your ears start to burn or you start to hear, or if you're seeing dinosaurs or whatever, tell us, because you're probably having some sort of side effect or allergic reaction to this antibiotic.
Right.
They put this antibiotic in within a minute. I had the worst taste in my mouth. Like I was gargling silverware doused in lemon juice.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrific. And I said to the nurse, I'm like, hey, am I supposed to have this taste in my mouth? And her eyes got real wide. She goes,
oops.
I don't know. I'm going to go find out, though. Let me go real quick. And to her credit, she was back within like 3 minutes and said, yeah, they said that's one of the side effects. You're going to have that taste. I'm like, oh, and then my head.
Yeah.
So everybody who's been in the hospital knows this. I'm not breaking new ground by telling you they come in all the time and they want to take your vitals and this and that.
Worst place to be to get rest.
It is. But the worst part was, since I hadn't slept all Sunday night, Monday I'm sleeping and doctors are coming in and talking to me, and I have no recollection of what they said because I was out. I know somebody came in from the wound clinic to look at my toe.
Okay.
I don't know what happened. I know she covered it. She said, "Oh, we got to keep this covered."
What did she cover it with? Like a gauze pad?
Gauze.
Okay.
Wrapped it up and
thought maybe put the blanket over you.
No, threw some beta. Yeah, because she didn't want to see it. Oh, we got to cover that up. That's horrific. Betadine and some gauze, and you know, and then doctors came in, and honestly, I don't know what they said because I was asleep. But I got, we're going to keep giving you the antibiotics. I was like, all right, that's
all
great.
Right. They have
because that's really all I care about. I wanted to sleep, and I wanted my leg to start looking like a leg again because I was being very, in your exhaustion, sometimes you get very hysterical. And my aunt, rest her soul, who was diabetic and had wounds out of it, had lost big chunks of her foot.
Oof.
And so I was like, oh, my God, do whatever you have to do, fix my foot. So to wrap things up, Monday I'm in there all day. I started watching a Netflix series, though, 13 Reasons Why. You may want to catch it. It's very critically acclaimed. Started watching that on my iPad. I don't know
why. Catch up on your TV viewing? Because
that's a very depressing show to be watching in the hospital while you're trying to figure out if your leg's going to fall off. And then Tuesday I wake up and my leg's a little bit smaller. So I'm thinking, oh, this is pretty good. So Tuesday night they let me go home.
Oh, good.
Wednesday and Thursday I did absolutely nothing because I was, you know, I'm still on antibiotics. I'm still on all this. I'm still having to put all this stuff on my toe. But I was able to wear shoes today. Some jazzy shoes that I bought for my vacation that I was only able to wear once because my feet swelled up so bad on vacation. But now I wore them today and they were quite comfortable. So that is a sure sign to me, one, that I'm way too vain for my own good, and two, that the medical science has actually done its job, and I am well on my way to being all right.
Well, that's great news.
Yes.
That is, because I know you really were worried. You make fun of it on the air.
I do make fun of it because I don't want to seem soft, Roger. Because, you know, I've got that old school, really outdated, completely erroneous view of masculinity. I'm a man. But when you look down at a bloated, purple, hairy sausage that used to be your leg, and the swelling had gone up past my knee.
Oh.
So it was. This was not... Oh, I've got a little sliver in my finger. No, things had gone a little off the rails.
Well, see, I would have taken it as a good sign that when the guy saw your leg, that they didn't draw a dotted line around your thigh.
And
that's a good sign that they didn't do that.
And I hear the ring.
Yeah, right.
Is the chainsaws firing up in the next room?
Yeah, right.
No, I was. But that's, and so thank you to all the people who sent nice messages and were asking about me. I appreciate that. I am mentally, I am still as unstable as I was last week. Physically, I am much, much better. So thank you for that. And, you know, it's one of those things that I know we had a medical professional call in last week and tell us, you know, chastised me a little bit, and rightfully so, because she thought I was kind of belittling all this and telling people not to seek medical attention. But again, I had sought medical attention prior to what I was talking about here on the program, and then I sought more medical attention, but only because a paramedic told me to go. I would have gone Sunday. No, I was going Monday to the doctor no matter what.
But if you woke up Monday...
Wow.
If you
Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
If I woke up Monday...
Wow.
That's, you know. But listen, you've gone through horrible medical things. We all go through medical stuff.
That's true,
You bounce back and you come back strong. And my daughter was very nice. She actually sounded concerned about me, so I know that was good. She cared. She wanted to get involved and see what was shaking, and so all that is dandy. Now, on the other side of the news, and you're always welcome to chime in, 312-981-7200. Brian, I hope you didn't take Cipro or Levaquin. I can't remember exactly what I'm taking. I took what they gave me. Here's the thing about me. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm barely a talk show host. Let's be honest. So I'm not going to go, listen, that's not the antibiotic for me. But, I took what they gave me and it worked. So that's all I care about. I know it's, is that irresponsible? No. Tuesday I asked the doctor questions because I was a little more, cold.
Oh, you were alert? Yeah,
sure. Let's do this. Then it's news time and so much more. Oh, just go straight to new. We're not doing our big 5-second promo there. We're going to blow that off. Wow. At least making an executive decision. Well, she knows we're late, and she's not used to this program where I treat the clock as just a suggestion. She's used to real broadcasters who hit things on time and do what they're supposed to do. And me, if they can't give me a monitor and they're giving me skin cancer from these lights, I'm going to be 30 seconds late for the news, and everybody's just going to have to chew on that. All right, so it's 6:30 on 720 WGN, and it is time for the news, allegedly. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. That's how you get a hold of the program. You know that. Karen Conti will be here after 8 o'clock. And after 7, the saddest Easter story ever. People are texting in. Did they ever say what caused the infection? I got a blister on the bottom of my toe that burst and somehow bacteria got in it. That was it, Could have been. I was walking around barefoot because I had gone native down there, Roger.
Yeah.
I was not wearing a shirt. I wasn't wearing shoes. I had gotten a little totem necklace like Greg Brady when he went to Hawaii. I was never coming back. But
you were growing your hair long.
Oh, and, sure.
Yeah.
My hair was long. My hair was long. I had a beard. Long hair. Didn't care. I didn't. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. I had weaved.
Oh, you were tan, too.
Sure,
man, bronzed.
Tan. Oh. Unbelievable. Yeah. Like a Greek god. It's unbelievable. But yeah, so that was it. It's whatever bacteria. And it was just regular old bacteria. It was not exotic. I wish it had been exotic bacteria. Yeah. I had a good day today. I started mentioning this with Carmen Harry. Did you do anything big? Do you do anything big for Passover? Do you have a couple seders over at the house?
No, seder over at my dad's wife's place over at the senior center. But I wasn't able to go. My wife and son did. I was still recovering from the weekend and my job, the work schedule.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stay awake. I was very tired on Monday. And so I wasn't able to go.
No Seder for you.
But I did go yesterday afternoon over to a friend's house, and it was kind of Seder leftovers.
What's left over from the Seder?
Well, the extra,
some extra matzo. Sure, you got a lot of matzo laying around.
Extra gefilte fish, some hard-boiled eggs.
Wow, tell you, man, you're making my mouth water. I can't tell whether it's
of course like a dummy. I'm
hungry with bile.
I was still tired yesterday afternoon. So he's got this plate of hard-boiled eggs, and I'm not really focusing on it.
Right,
and I took my fork. Thinking, all right, it's been peeled, right?
Sure,
it's been
of course.
Shelled, right?
Well, and they should be.
And I went down with the fork, and no, they hadn't been.
Oh, see, that's just bad hosting right there. If you're going to put out hard-boiled eggs, right, you got to have them all shelled up.
And they didn't have any salt water to dip them in like you're supposed to. And
what
no
does that
parsley.
Symbolize?
The tears. The tears.
Oh, the tears?
Yeah, of the journey. Yeah,
who's,
the salt.
Who's... granted, I'm not Jewish now,
that's
so
right.
don't take offense when I ask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do eggs and tears, how are they connected? And whose tears are they?
The tears of the Jews who traveled with Moses.
And why are we
desert.
Dipping an egg in there, though? I get the tears part. I get salt water
Isn't
being
tears. Is parsley that you dip in there?
You also dip the parsley in there, too.
What does parsley symbolize?
The bitterness of... I don't know.
So bitter and tears. Yeah. I'm understanding all that.
The bitterness of the life.
I don't know where the eggs come in.
A new birth, a new being reborn. Which
See, I
the
come
Jews
to you.
Were.
I come to you for the answers, right. And you sound more like you're asking me questions. Your
but,
answer,
no,
your answers sound like
no,
questions.
It's the rebirth. It's you
okay.
know eggs. You know.
All right.
And
okay,
it's part of what's on the Seder plate. You have a shank bone. You have parsley. You have an egg. You have some maror.
What is Marora?
It's like apples and...
Oh, it's
and,
so good. Like
yeah.
A little
it's kind of on the sweet side, and you always put it on a little piece of matzah.
I found out why the eggs, what the eggs symbolize.
Ah, what does the egg symbolize, Lise?
Well, they call it Zeroa, and it's a special, it's the only element of meat on the Seder plate. A roasted hard-boiled egg symbolizing the Korban Shagiga.
Are you reading Hebrew?
Yeah.
Okay.
Festival sacrifice.
Okay, no, she's reading Klingon. Roger, what did you think she was reading?
I just wanted to make sure.
Reading, nope, she's reading pirate. Yes, of course she's reading Hebrew.
The festival sacrifice that was offered in the temple in Jerusalem and roasted and eaten as a part of the meal on Seder night. So there you go.
All right, but let me ask this then, because you just said, Lise, that it is the only meat product
yeah,
put on
but
the plate. But Roger said shank bone, and shank bone is meaty.
That's true.
This but it's just the bone. It's,
go to
a, it's not the meat.
Page really quick.
But there's no meat on it?
No.
Would
no,
you
no,
boil
no.
it all
just
off?
The bone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you gnaw on the bone and have an egg with salt water.
Well, you dip the parsley.
This is all part of like the,
you put the ceremony.
And then
the...
you eat the actual feast.
Oh, and then oh,
oh yeah, that's not the regular meal.
That's not the meal.
Oh, no, no, no.
See, now why do you lead me down the path then, making me think?
That's
I
all
say,
part of the service.
Part of the, okay, so
and
all
then
right,
once
well, that,
the service
okay,
is done,
then that part that sure,
and
then the
you
stuff.
Dig into the regular food.
Really
you got a chicken soup. You got brisket. You got
oh, so there's no food. There's no restrictions on the regular meal.
No,
it's,
well,
it's
no.
with the ceremonial part.
No flour,
right, right, right,
though. Right.
Right. Well, because matzah's unleavened. Yeah.
Sure, of
right.
course.
Right.
So you can't have like a cake because that's
well,
no,
you can have a
flourless chocolate cake, which
can,
is what
yeah.
is that what you
yeah.
guys have? That
well, actually,
good.
I'm speaking like I'm Jewish, but my best friend's family is Jewish, and I'm Jewish because you know I'm basically part of the family. And I have a Passover story.
Does that
this
work
year.
That way? Okay,
I don't know.
You have a Passover story?
Well,
please share.
A lack of Passover story, actually, because I was kind of uninvited to their festivities this year for the first time in like 10 years. I mean, I guess I was never invited, but I thought it was like implied because I go every year. But this year, I did not have Passover dinner. So,
oh, no.
Roger, I'm really jealous.
I wish I'd known I would have brought some over the weekend.
Got any shank bones up there?
Yeah, no, I'm so we don't have anything up
shame.
Here. Sorry.
Nothing?
No.
Not even
not
any
even
Easter
matzah.
Candy? No matzah? No,
no
Easter candy? Nothing, huh?
No.
Man.
But we do have a lot of, I mean, for Passover, you can eat a lot of candy, too. A lot of sugar.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the jelly... the sweet jelly pieces that you can have, the slices. Gosh, what else?
Can you still go with the chocolate coins that you had at Hanukkah if you
that's
had any
Hanukkah.
Of those left
that's
over? I know they're,
well,
not, I know they're Hanukkah
them.
Candies,
yeah,
but
they
I'm
haven't
saying
tried
if you have
out
them left
on
over,
you. Sure.
You know, a lot of people overbuy.
Yeah, but that's true.
Instead of waiting until next year.
Because they want more afterwards.
Sure, of course.
You know,
well, like, that's, see, and it, that's, you learn some things. Because I know, you know, I know there's a big difference. So we go, today, we went to brunch. Because that's what, you know, Easter, you got to go to brunch, I guess. And my brother is nice enough to host it. He's a member of a country club. He's very fancy. Big time guy. I'm not a country club guy at all. Even though I dress like one, I got... numerous compliments on my ensemble today because I dressed like I was going to a country club on Easter.
Mm-hmm.
I do enjoy seeing people in their Easter finery.
There well, everybody gets dressed up because
yes.
it's a springish kind of day.
There were women in big hats.
Yeah.
The whole nine. Sure, everybody looked good. There were a lot of guys in pastel colors that you're sure they would not. Now, I'll wear pastels. It doesn't matter.
You have before,
sure,
yeah.
All the time.
Very dapper.
But a lot of guys will not other than Easter, and they all looked good. You know, some guy complimented me, said, oh, you look so Eastery. And he was wearing yellow linen pants. And I said, well, sir, you do as well. But, you know, we're there and the Easter Bunny is there running around. The Easter Bunny, the creepiest of all holiday mascots.
Yeah, I don't
because
get
the Easter
it.
Bunny doesn't speak. And my young nieces who are, 6, 4, and 2? The 4-year-old and the 2-year-old monopolized the Easter Bunny. To the point where my 4-year-old niece, who is my goddaughter, I love her very, very much. She's not all. Sometimes she's not the most social. She's a great kid. Sometimes she just tired. She don't want to talk. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You would have thought this Easter Bunny was her therapist.
Oh my gosh.
She sat with the Easter like my brother should have paid the Easter Bunny for daycare today because the Easter Bunny. I don't know. I don't want to think about who was in the costume
mm-hmm.
or why he, she, it, whoever, with the bunny,
mm-hmm.
why the bunny was so patient, but the bunny did a very nice job with these kids who just, my niece just sat with the bunny, dragged
wow.
the bunny over to our table. They sat there and At one point, I thought my brother was going to have to take the Easter Bunny home with him. And I just pictured my brother looking in the rearview mirror and the bunny silently sitting in the middle of the back seat just waving at him. And it was a very creepy visual because, again, I've never gotten the Easter Bunny.
Yeah,
we would go when I was a kid, and I took my daughter when she was little. But, you know, some are brown, some are white. Some look like female bunnies. Some look like dudes. They never talk.
Most of them don't even hop.
No,
they just walk around holding a carrot.
And they just sit there.
Yeah.
And they got white, like, pallbearer gloves on. It's a whole weird, creepy vibe that I don't enjoy with the Easter Bunny. And this one was, you know, for a posh country club, this was a low-rent Easter Bunny. I'm not going to lie. The suit came up, but the cowl under the head didn't tuck into the suit, so like the neckline was all askew, and his bunny pants were drooping a little bit, like he was a millennial hip hop bunny. It was all just things just didn't feel right. And then at one point, my youngest niece had a blister because this was the first day, you know, and I'm sure we all have this.
Blister.
Sure, because the first day you wear your summery sandals, everybody gets a blister, right, Lise? You know, you were used to wearing socks and boots all winter. You bust out your jellies for Easter, which is what the
girls... I
actually
have a blister growing on my toe.
See?
Because you're wearing
I hope I don't get infected.
What is this?
I don't get infected. Don't, please.
I won't go to the Dominican Republic.
Here's the thing. If you get a blister, put a Band-Aid on it. Don't walk around barefoot everywhere. From the beach to the patio to the bathroom. That was probably where I got it.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, we'll just leave it at that. Now, my youngest niece decided she was going to tell the Easter Bunny that she had a blister and put her foot up on her bare foot up on the Easter Bunny's lap. And the Easter Bunny kind of rubbed her foot, which I thought may have crossed some sort of ethical holiday mascot line. I'm not exactly sure. And I didn't want to make a big deal out of it. My brother was a tad bit concerned. My sister-in-law didn't. She didn't seem to care one way or another.
Yeah.
But you know, it just the whole thing was very weird. And then I got to pretend that I'm, you know, cultured and walking around this country club and everybody's high-fiving. And you can tell it's the kind of people that you'd go, oh, these are nice people, but you know, it's a different environment. It's not my environment. You know,
it's a little high up there, a little highfalutin for you.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, not that it wouldn't be fun to be a member of a country club,
mm-hmm.
but I don't golf, so one, there's no need.
We got to get you out golfing. Come on, please.
Maybe. Listen, right. I got a bad foot, Roger. I can't.
Well, when it gets better. Hey, you ride a golf cart. You walk like a total of 5 feet every hole.
Oh, it's not the exercise that I'm afraid of. It's the fact that I'm not good at it.
Well, then come with me, and you'll be fantastic.
I hate not being good at stuff.
And trust me, I do too, and that's why I golf, because I know I can hit the ball. I just am not very good, and I'm okay with that.
All right, we've got some Seder calls. Let's get to these real quick. Diane wants to weigh in on Seder. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Brian and Roger, and I'm glad that you're both doing well, health-wise.
So are we.
And
thanks.
I love everyone at WGN. I go back to Wally Phillips. That's how long I've been listening. I wanted to, and I wish everybody a good Easter, a happy Pesach, which is Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And Roger should give you a Haggadah. It's a little guide. Passover is the celebration of our becoming free from slavery.
Right.
And the bone is called, the shank bone is called Zeruah, that's Hebrew, and the egg is Betzah. And the lamb bone represents spring. It also represents the blood that was put on the doorpost.
Oh, right, because they had to sacrifice the lamb.
Did you watch the Ten Commandments?
I know Moses and the Hebrewites. I love Yul Brynner every year. Every year.
Yes, it's a classic, a little schmaltzy, but, you know.
This is what we needed. We need, because I'll be honest, Diane, Roger seemed a little hesitant on some of his answers.
Because he didn't go to the Seder.
Maybe that's it. He forgot. But you would think after all these years he'd have this down pat.
Well, I do when I go to the Seder.
That's why we have it every year, because we always go over it. And it's a time of asking
the
questions.
The story is repeated every year.
It's
the
repeated.
Same story, yeah.
All right. Well, Diane, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. And let's get one more Seder fact from Paula. Hi, Paula.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much. I want to wish everybody a blessed holiday season. I'm a cantor in the Chicago area. And I just completed leading three seders for Jewish elderly in the Chicago Northwest suburbs. And the lady preceding me was correct on a lot of the symbolism. Basically, it's a celebration of spring and freedom. We relate it to modern-day the Passover name. We relate to modern-day passing through this past year of trials and tribulations and looking forward to the new year. The new year. That's the symbolism of a modern-day interpretation of the holiday of Passover. We do sit around the table. Seder means order. And we proceed through the order of the service with this book called Haggadah. It's the service order. There are symbolic foods. There is a main Seder plate on the table. They already discussed.
Roger gave us the rundown on what's on there. And
The one thing that Maurer was incorrect, the Maurer he mentioned was a symbol of the bitter herbs, the tyranny that Jews have experienced over centuries. The haroset is the chopped fruit salad that we eat, and it's delicious, commemorating the mortar that the Israelites made to build the pyramids, which are still standing today.
Now, is Roger going to get some sort of fine because he had his facts incorrect?
I think have an extra piece of matzah. That's the most unpleasant.
That's the punishment? All right.
Yeah, right.
Listen, I think that's...
we eat matzah, and it tastes just like the bread, the box it comes in.
Well, Paula, I appreciate...
For 7 days through tomorrow or Tuesday, depending on how observant you are.
All right. So tomorrow or Tuesday?
Tomorrow or Tuesday.
Okay, it ends at sundown Tuesday, is that right?
Yes, some very observant people stretch it into Tuesday.
Right.
Roger ended it last Thursday.
That's enough. It's 7 days tomorrow. It's not the most digestible food to eat. We eat it as a sacrifice for the tyranny that the Jews underwent. That's why, primarily, that's why.
And there's a lot of wine involved, too.
Now, at the Seder, you're supposed to drink 4 cups of wine. Or
now you got me interested. Paula, you buried the lead. Yeah. So, we got to eat a fruit salad, blah, blah, blah. Now you got
to
drink 4 cups of wine.
The Passover wine for
perfect.
Passover.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
And there's a spare cup.
I just sipped my cups. I couldn't there down 4 cups.
Well, Paula, listen, I appreciate the information. I got to roll, but thank you so much.
Thank you for allowing me to express our freedom and
it is my pleasure.
To the folks
and
blessings and Jesus' Last Supper was a Seder. That's our main connection.
Very nice.
Our main connection in religion. So we are both branches meet at this time of year.
There you go. Well, thanks for the info, Paula.
Christianity and Judaism meet at this time of year.
Thank you. Bye bye. All right, let's do this, and then there's more. And Roger.
Yeah.
Next time, lead with the wine.
Lead with
any celebration. Anytime I'm asking you about Jewish tradition,
booze.
Because I like to learn things.
Yeah.
If there's booze involved, lead with the booze.
Got it.
That'll hook me.
Right.
And then I stay interested through the whole thing.
And we got 4 cups. There's a spare one.
All right. I got to do this. This is not Hebrew school. I appreciate it. We all watch The Magic Door on Sunday mornings. I understand.
Go do what you got to do.
Tree. That's very pretty. At least picking out all the music tonight. I feel like doing a minuet, Roger, because nothing if not agile when it comes to the dance floor. Hey, here's a programming note. Both Lisa and I will be in tomorrow afternoon. I am in for Rokan and Anna DeVlantes tomorrow. They're taking the day off because they're, just having a wonderful Easter and stretching it out into Monday. So we are happy to be here from 3 to 7 tomorrow afternoon. Lots of fun things to get to tomorrow. On the other side of the news, of course, we will have the saddest Easter story ever, and then we will try, if you were with your family over this holiday weekend, perhaps you have some teenagers in the family, and you heard them talking, and they were saying words that you knew sounded like they were English, but they really had no meaning to you because you're over, 20, 25, or you've read a thesaurus, or you just like to speak proper English. So I have a guide that will help you decipher what maybe your teenage children or some of your teenage relatives were saying and will be saying, and quite frankly, I saw this and I read it and I shook my head, not in disgust, not in sadness, just in the fact that I have aged out of every cool demographic known to man. Now, we always complain about corporate greed and corporations not doing the right thing and how social media is the be-all and end-all and the horrible thing, but sometimes social media does what it's supposed to do, and even though I do not drink this soft drink, I commend the people at Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper surprised a Kansas woman with her very own outdoor soda fountain after she shared a tweet expressing her love for the beverage. I have to start expressing my love for things.
Yeah.
Hey, like Mercedes-Benz, yes. Mad, oh mad, you are the greatest vehicle of all time. Kansas State University student Claire Daniels tweeted in December saying that she wished she had a Dr. Pepper fountain installed in her house to save money on her favorite soft drink. She said, this was the tweet, I really just need to have a Dr. Pepper fountain installed in my house. That would probably be cheaper than how much I spend on it currently. So the Dr. Pepper brand people, who, unlike some corporations that seem tone deaf when people talk about them on social media, United, I'm looking at you, they jumped on this. So the soda company arrived on her doorstep a couple days ago to install a 6-foot-tall maroon-colored Dr. Pepper fountain in her front yard that holds up to 5 gallons of Dr. Pepper.
Wow.
She said, it's really crazy. I'm still kind of in awe. I was just kind of it was kind of a joke tweet, but here we are. I think it's awesome. I'm really excited. It's kind of crazy to think one tweet could make this happen. And one tweet can. Look at, you know, president tweets, all kinds of things happened.
Lots of stuff happened.
I've tweeted at corporations a couple of times, mm-hmm. and to be honest, I have gotten responses. I've never gotten anything, you know, free. One was right. an airline. One was an amusement park, actually, because I was long story, but I was looking for something that I broke at home to replace for my wife,
mm-hmm.
and so I tweeted this company. They got back to me. They couldn't help me, but they got back to me.
Oh.
And then there was another time where I tweeted somebody. So Daniel said she drinks 2 or 3 cans of Dr. Pepper a day. She won't be able to drink from the decorative outdoor fountain. Why not?
Really?
Well, maybe. I guess
what good is it?
Well, they gave her 1,200 cans of pop, too.
Oh.
I think the fountain's just for decoration.
For publicity.
And the Dr. Pepper just keeps recycling. I mean, I guess if you're really desperate, you could drink tainted Dr. Pepper, and then you and I can share a room.
Bird poop and rainwater. And
yeah, see, that's what I was wondering, because you need the, if you got a soda fountain, if you have a soda fountain, you need the mix and then the seltzer.
Well, this is a fountain like you would see in a garden.
I got you.
Bubbly. But they gave her 1,200 cans, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
They said, we always love monitoring social media to see what our fans are saying about us and how they are expressing their love of Dr. Pepper. She had a really creative tweet about just needing a Dr. Pepper fountain. She thought that would make her life easier. We put our own creative spin on it by building an actual fountain, not the one she might expect, and throwing her a party. Dr. Pepper said other people may receive similar surprises based on tweets about their brand.
Ooh.
As part of a marketing campaign. So if you like Dr. Pepper or any other brand, you know they're watching. Doesn't matter whether it's Coke, Pepsi, Budweiser, you name it, they're watching. All right, on the other side of the news, the highly anticipated holiday classic, or soon-to-be holiday classic, or just annoying holiday tale, the saddest Easter story ever. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Conti will be here in an hour, supposedly. Now, we have been receiving urgent messages from Karen that she is in traffic. What was Roger? Do you have the? Can you give me that Kennedy inbound time again, please?
Why, certainly I can. Coming in from the airport, it's a 37-minute trip. Most of that again is coming in as you come out from the airport. There still are some delays there. I can give you a more detailed account of that.
Nah, that's fine.
Well, because they split
it up. They're not leaving the airport. They were coming from McHenry, and at about
Then they merge onto the
Kennedy. So they said they were on the Kennedy near the airport. So 37 minutes, so, that's plenty. They got 50 minutes to get. And I know they're not listening, but don't worry. You'll get here. You'll be fine.
Once they get towards the junction and then
Petticoat Junction?
It'll be fine once they get past Mannheim. It should open up quite a bit.
Did it bother anybody else in Petticoat Junction that the girls were taking a bath in the water supply that the town drank out of?
Mm-hmm.
Did it bother you, Roger?
Yeah,
bothered me.
Thank God I didn't live there.
I don't want to live in Petticoat Junction. Now, Lisa's looking at me like, what
Wait
is
a minute.
Petticoat Junction?
But if you think about it, that water tower was not the water supply. That water tower was only for the train.
Oh, that was just for the train?
That was for the train.
Right,
it was right by the tracks there.
Maybe I overreacted.
Yeah, it's all right.
You know, there's okay. a little train that's rolling down the tracks.
Well, because your viewing was distracted. Your mind was distracted when they popped up out of there.
Well, sure, because all of a sudden, you know, a young Brian is seeing three supposedly naked ladies in a water tower and, mm-hmm. you know.
Grabbing their petticoats?
Thoughts go where they go.
Yeah.
My focus has to shift. Mm-hmm. Do you even know what we're talking about,
No
Liz?
Idea.
It's a TV show from a long time ago. When was that? Late 60s?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I went along with Green Acres.
Green Acres.
Because they didn't live too far from there.
Oh, sure. No, they all went together. Yeah. All those shows went together. Mm-hmm. Andy Griffith, Gomer Pyle.
Yeah.
All that. Everything was based down in the Carolinas back then, when we thought the Carolinas were like Appalachia, you know, now.
222 episodes of Petticoat Junction.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's a lot
Maybe
of episodes.
Maybe I've got some binging to do. Do you think it's on Netflix?
I'm sure you can find it.
It's on Amazon
watching?
Prime.
No,
and
of course
it's free.
Not. Okay. There's Uncle Joe. He's moving kind of slow at the junction. Mm-hmm. Or are they Peggy Sue, Betty Sue, and Bobby Sue? Bobby Sue?
I think so.
Yeah, Bobby Sue, Betty Sue, and Peggy Sue, I think. Mm.
But then didn't one of them change because one got married and left the series?
And did the mom own a hotel? But she turned up on another show, too.
Yeah, she,
Benedette. That's the actress's name.
Yeah, right. And she owned the home, which was like a bed and breakfast, basically.
Sure.
Well,
the hobos came off the train. That's where you want a bed and breakfast, right next to the train tracks, mm-hmm. where the ne'er-do-wells and the hobos can come in, heat up their can of beans by setting a fire to your thin mattress up in your bed.
And then Sam Drucker ran the store.
Sure, but Drucker ran the store on Green Acres, too.
That's right.
Drucker, you know.
Yeah, he got around.
He had a monopoly. Maybe he had a chain of Druckers all over the Southeast. I don't know. Now, Arnold the Pig was on Green Acres.
Right.
But Uncle Joe had a dog, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did Uncle Joe have a dog?
Like, yes, he did.
Kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies dog. Was it a bloodhound?
No, it wasn't. But it was a small...
A Pekingese? What was it?
Not larger than a Pekingese, but it was hairy. It had a lot of...
Wow, this is fascinating. I don't know. Lee said, wow, we did the first hour almost all on Passover. That wasn't what you planned. I said, yeah, I know. That's kind of how this show goes. All of a sudden, we have a plan, and then I go, oh, there's a small dog. I don't think that was Uncle Joe's dog.
Lee,
welcome
to Brian's mind.
We got to find out. Hold on. Sir, what kind of dog is that you're waving in the window? And the dog looks miserable because you're manipulating its paws in a way that they usually don't get manipulated.
I mean, he looks so miserable, doesn't he?
He does. He's in a trance. He's trying to hypnotize himself so he doesn't realize that you're turning him upside down like a piñata. What kind of dog is that, other than sandwich size?
It's a Shih Tzu.
A Shih Tzu. We can't say that on the air. That's against FCC. Thank you for losing the license for us. I appreciate that. Happy holidays. That was, boy... Yeah, I love when people hold their dog. Look, my dog is so happy. No, your dog is like, let me down or I'll kill you. You're going to sleep tonight and I'm going to rip your throat out. I know my dogs look at me like that, or my dog looks at me like that all the time. All right, so I know people have been waiting. They've been clamoring. And
seriously, you've been distracting too much, and I'm getting upset up here.
Relax,
I want to hear the story
we're getting
again.
To it right now. I understand. I had a little thing today because I told you I was at brunch with my family,
right.
And somehow my mom brings up the ham story, the Easter story, then one of my brothers who's in, you know, he's very into now uncovering his feelings and delving into his past and, you know, coming to terms with issues and blah, blah, blah. He's like, maybe you need to let this go. Are you telling that story tonight? I said, yeah, of course I'm telling the story tonight. But maybe you need to let that go after all these years. I said, well, sure, I could, but it's a good story, and people want to hear it. He's like, well, do people want to hear it, or do you just need to tell it again? And I'm like, well, both.
Yeah, right.
Because if people want to hear it, I'm going to tell it. And then I said, now I was with two of my brothers and my mother. All three of those people witnessed or caused the story I'm about to tell. And I said, is anything I'm going to tell about this story false? And of course, my mom is like, no. And so they started, they're like, my mom's trying to push it off on my dad. And my brother says, well, make sure that people know that your dad is dead. And I was like, what does that have to do with the story? Because it's not all on my dad. So let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then we will come back, and I will share what has come to be known over all these years as the saddest Easter story ever. We'll do that right after this, so Roger doesn't have a hissy. We'll get to it right after this on WGN. Hey, now.
Come ride the little train that is rolling down the tracks to the junction. Forget about your cares.
It's time to relax.
Time to relax at the junction.
Lots of curves, Roger.
Yeah, you bet.
Even more.
Even more when you get
where?
To the junction.
Duh.
Oh.
We got a text. It was Bobby Joe, Billy Joe, and Betty Joe were the sisters' names. Very good. Mm-hmm. At least finding the Petticoat Junction theme song.
Look at that.
See, this is what happens when a producer's paying attention. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to leave it right there. I'm going to lay it out there. Just going to put the word out. Leave it on the table. You do what you want with it. All right, here's the story. So every year I tell this story, and people have... This is... Someone sent me a message today. Your saddest Easter story ever has become one of our favorite holiday traditions. And if that's true, I am humbled. But here it is. All right. So, the saddest Easter story ever. I was in fifth or sixth grade, so I was 10 or 11 years old. And as you know, Roger, I am strong-willed at this age. I was strong-willed as a child. So it's the Saturday night before Easter Sunday, and my mother, in her wisdom, has decided to make a big ham dinner for the family. My four brothers, my father and I, and my mom all crowded around our little table in Glenwood. Now, up until this point, I must say that I had never eaten ham. They knew this. This was not a surprise to my mother or my father that I had not eaten ham. My brothers really didn't like ham either. I find out today that one of my brothers still will not eat ham, not in solidarity with me, but just because he doesn't like it. And my other brother said, ham is for breakfast. It is not a standalone dinner. So in hindsight, they all backed my play, but they were too cowardly to say anything. So we're having dinner, and I, of course, am not eating the ham. And for some reason this night, my mom had a hard life. She had five sons, and she had my dad. She had nobody that would put the seat down. It was probably a hard life, being the only woman in this house. And she cooked for us all the time. She worked. She made a lot of effort. And in fairness, I told my mom I was telling this story, and if she wanted to weigh in, she could call in. Don't answer the phone for the next half hour, at least. So for some reason, it really bothered her this one Easter night that I was not going to eat the ham. So much so that for reasons that she still cannot vocalize, she began to sob that I was not eating the ham. That something had happened, the dinner was being ruined, and I would not eat. The more she went into histrionics, the angrier my father got. And the way the table, it was a rectangular table. My brother Dennis and I sat on a bench on one of the long sides. My dad sat directly across from me. I could see my dad getting madder and madder to the point where he said, you're going to eat that GD ham. And I said, no, I'm not. And he said, you're going to take one bite of that ham or you're not getting an Easter basket. My mom cried louder at this point and my brother's faces all fell. Because even as the youngest one was probably only a couple years old. But the other ones knew that this was a serious threat. I, of course, knew that this threat was baseless. Because there was not any chance that I would be denied an Easter basket. Not when everybody else in the family was going to get one. I had faith that the Easter bunny was going to deliver, not my father. I knew my dad didn't bring the Easter baskets. My mom didn't bring the Easter baskets. The Easter Bunny brought the Easter baskets. And the Easter Bunny didn't give two figs if I ate ham or not. So I held my ground, which made my dad even more furious. Because, as you know as a father, Roger, and I know as a father, you want your kids to do what you tell them.
Yep.
Especially when they're 10 or 11 years old, snot-nosed punks, and it comes down to taking one bite of ham.
Yeah.
Now, today my brother said, why didn't you just take the bite of the ham? And now I can, boastfully say, well, it's principle, blah, blah, blah. I don't know why I didn't take it. I was dumb. But
well,
I was
you were
gonna...
in defiance. You didn't like your father telling you what to do.
Sure, even at 11, I was anti-establishment. The man was not going to put his boot on my neck, whether it came to what I was going to wear, what I was going to do with my life, or what salted cured meat I was going to put or not put in my mouth. So we sat there in a stalemate. My mom crying, my brother's terrified, and my dad just glaring at me. And by this time, he had finished his ham and had lit up his cool, which is, that was his modus operandi. Yeah. He would eat really fast and then start to smoke. The rest of us be damned. And we're all fine now. But anyway, so he's smoking and he's getting madder and madder. And I'm looking at this plate And I ate all, you know, whatever was with it, some potatoes and some vegetable in it. And there's the ham just sitting there. Now it's getting cold and the ham juice is starting to congeal on top of it. Mm-hmm. And now I'm really not going to eat it because it's nastier than when my mom took it out of the oven. And I'm looking at it and he keeps saying, I'm serious. If you don't eat that ham, you're not getting an Easter basket. And now my mom chimes in. Yeah, if you don't eat that ham, you're not getting an Easter basket. And I decided I'm going to roll the dice. Fine. No Easter basket for me. Ha. Right. So dinner end. They clear the table. That's it. Last chance. You're going to take a bite of ham? And it was down to one bite. Again, in hindsight, dumb move on my part. But it shows how stubborn. It lays the groundwork for the bad decisions I've made throughout the rest of my life. So now we go to bed. And in the Noonan house, we had like a split ranch. So our bedrooms were up like five stairs and you could look down into the living room, which is where all the Easter baskets would be. And there were five Easter baskets across the front of the couch, each one with a name on it, because God forbid one of us got up and thought something in somebody else's Easter basket was ours and there was a whole big thing. So five Easter baskets. And I'm confident when I go to bed that when I wake up, all five of those Easter baskets are going to be filled. Because again, in my 10-year-old mind, the Easter Bunny doesn't care whether I ate ham or not. So I sleep the sleep of angels. And I wake up the next morning with my brothers, and we're all very excited. Now, to keep my brothers and I in line, and to keep the youngest ones from falling down the stairs, we had what now would be described as a pet gate. You know, now they make cool gates for kids.
Oh, right.
But
right,
back in the day, remember the accordion wooden gates, Roger?
Yep.
That you could stick your head through and pray that nobody tried to close it because you'd get decapitated?
Mm-hmm.
It was very Marie Antoinette in everybody's house. So we had one of those, and the gate was closed, and we knew we weren't supposed to open the gate. So on Christmas morning or Easter morning, we would all be at the gate like inmates. If we had had tin cups, we would have been running them across the bars trying to get up. So we're waiting, and we're on the landing, and we're looking into the living room, and there they are, man, four Easter baskets.
What?
And I'm like, wait a minute, there's five of us. And I keep looking, and I count my brothers again, just in case maybe I forgot. Maybe there weren't five of us. Maybe there were only four. Maybe the youngest one was just a figment of our imagination, like Harvey the bunny.
Exactly.
I didn't know. Maybe there was just a baby hanging around that wasn't really part of the family, but had been brought in on some exchange student program.
For show.
Right, for show.
You're right.
Because it's always nice to have a baby in a stroller during the holidays. So I'm 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. There's five of us. There's four baskets. Uh-oh. Something is amiss. Well, my parents get up, and they open the gate. My brothers rush down, and I rush down, and I'm right. There's only four baskets. And I'm looking and looking. You know where the fifth basket was? My basket? Under the dining room table, empty. Empty. Nothing. The Easter bunny had stiffed me. Somehow, my parents had gotten to the bunny. I don't know whether it was a bribe. I don't know what their influence they had over him. But the Easter bunny had stiffed me. So now, here I am in my jammies, 10 years old, Easter morning, expecting to come down and, you know, our Easter baskets were always pretty top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Fannie Mae. Mm-hmm. We never had Fannie Mae during the year, but we always had Fannie Mae on Easter. And there was always some sort of other, you know, like a book or puzzles or maybe an 8-track or something. There was always something else besides the candy. So our Easter baskets were a pretty good deal. Nothing. No grass. Nothing. An empty wicker basket just sitting under the table. And my dad looked at me and he's like, well, we told you. And I was like, yeah, but I didn't believe you. Because what are you going to do?
Right.
So now my brothers, oh, man, my brothers are going through their candy. Oh, look what I got. I got this. I got a puzzle. I got this book. Look, I got a game. What'd you get? I got nothing. I got nothing except contempt now. So, okay, time to get dressed for church. Well, I know I'm going to see my friends at church. I have to go now to church with my family. And afterwards, everybody is talking about what they got in their Easter baskets, you know, because little kids, you know, obviously we care about church, whatever. But when you're little, you really want to get back home to your Easter basket.
Sure.
So my friend's like, oh, what was in your Easter basket? And I'm lying to my friends because I'm so embarrassed. I can't believe that the Easter bunny didn't come. Or well, he came. He just stiffed me.
Yeah.
So I'm lying. And my only hope at that point was, the church was having a big Easter basket raffle. You know, this giant basket. We had bought some tickets while at school and stuff. So my only hope was maybe I'll win this raffle and somehow my Easter will be salvaged. Alas, I did not win the raffle. Mm-hmm. I had to go home. My brothers did not share any candy with me. It was just horrible. And now I know everybody for years had been asking, so do you eat ham now? Of course I wouldn't eat. Now, I would never eat ham.
Just I don't, on principle.
Yeah, yeah. Right now, yeah. Now it is principle. Now it's a grudge. Yeah. Yeah. You thought I held a grudge against Hall & Oates for so long.
Yeah.
Ham and I have had a hate-hate relationship for many, many years. So I learned that because this was a punishment heaped on with other punishments similar to that. And now my brothers hear these stories and they remember it. And they want me to keep it quiet, like it's a private shame. You know, some families have horrible secrets.
Yeah.
Which you would never want to bring to light unless you're in therapy or trying to... They think this is one of those horrible secrets.
But it didn't like happen to them.
No, but it did happen. And if it could happen to me, they know it could have happened to them. And they're wondering if maybe they've suppressed those memories. And maybe it did happen to them and they don't remember. But it didn't happen to them. Because by the time my youngest brother was 10, he could have thrown a ham through the plate glass window in the front and the Easter Bunny still would have come. But now, not me. So that was, every Easter, I remember that. And I made sure, as my daughter was growing up, I never threw one of those ultimate nuclear option punishments at her. Yeah. Because that's what it was. It was like the Senate decided my Easter morning. They threw down the nuclear option.
Mm-hmm.
And I called their bluff, and yes, I know, again, people say, why didn't you just eat it? Because I didn't like it.
But
it
was just one bite.
It
could have been just
a sliver.
I know, Roger,
but if 50-year-old Brian could go back and tell 10-year-old Brian, just take it and trade off a good story for one Easter morning, nah, I've gotten a lot of mileage out of that story. I would have gotten like 2 weeks out of the candy.
Yeah, right.
Now I got 20 years out of this story, and it still makes my mom uncomfortable. Every time I tell it, my mom gets uncomfortable because I know deep down in her heart she can't believe that they did that to me. And so she bears the brunt of it. And listen, I forgive her.
Right.
Let the world know I have forgiven her because I became a grown man and I bought my own Easter candy.
That's what I was going to ask you. So
no, today I didn't. I'm trying to lose the weight I gained on vacation.
Okay.
But I could. I could buy my own candy.
Oh, I thought maybe out of continued guilt, she would continue to buy you candy.
No, no, no.
Oh, okay.
She gave us baskets for a long time. And after that, you know, every year after that, I got it. I think they realized at some point those punishments weren't having the effect on me that they should.
Right.
So what's the point? Because now you're just arming me with a quiver full of stories that I'm going to use against you for the rest of my days. So there you have it, folks. The holiday classic, the saddest Easter story ever. Yeah. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you took joy in my misery. So if that's good. All right, we got to take a break. No, we don't. All right, Lisa's juggling things around because she's like, you are too long-winded. We don't have time for your shenanigans. So on the other side of the news, I'll help you decipher what your teenage relatives and children are saying. All of that and more coming up after the news. It's 7:31 on 720 WGN.
Got me like, oh my God, I'm so in love. I found you finally. You make me want to say, oh,
right on. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Conti will be here after 8 o'clock. If you have a legal question, perhaps you want to sue the Easter Bunny because you didn't get enough Reese's Eggs. I don't know what your legal problem is, but Karen can answer it at 312-981-7200. So make sure you start getting those calls in right after 8 o'clock. Real quick, I keep seeing everybody posting pictures of their lamb cakes. That is one of my favorite Easter snacks, and I did not have one. You ever have a lamb cake, Roger?
No, never
Lisa,
have.
You ever have a lamb cake?
My best friend makes one every year, but I've never had
They're
one.
They're the greatest.
What's special
They're like
about
it? Well, I don't know. It's pound cake and the buttercream frosting, that combination. And then you get to whack a head off something, and there's no blood, but you get to eat it, and it's sweet and delicious.
Is there coconut?
Put, like, jello, red jello inside.
Oh, now you're talking.
That's
get like a
scary,
jelly roll
right?
Lamb cake. That would be, that
blood
would be
going.
Great. Oh, man. I'm going to come up with one of those next year and freak everybody out. No, some have coconut. Some don't. Usually they throw little jelly beans around the outside. You know,
I've seen
you can
those.
Get them everywhere.
Yeah,
you know. My mom used to make them when she wasn't making ham. Somebody, I listen, I'm going to defend my mom real quick, because somebody texted in and said, oh, that's horrible parenting. It was the 70s. Parenting was different, you know? It's questionable, sure, but I don't think it was bad parenting. They did the best they could. They did all right. My brothers and I all turned out all right. Well, my brothers turned out all right, and I turned out like me. So maybe
we're still waiting for the doctor's report back. Sure,
there
might
be. You never know what might happen when you start digging too deep. That's why I try to, you know, Roger, mm-hmm. a lot of people want to get in touch with their feelings. I want to push mine down so far I never see them again. Hopefully, they stay buried until I'm dead, and then who cares?
Right.
Someday they might come bursting forth, and then who knows? Oh, yeah, at a most inappropriate time.
Exactly.
My daughter's wedding, when I'm professing my love to my wife here on the air. You never know when that day might come when I just – it's like when you push something down too much, and then all of a sudden it just squirts out the side and explodes. That could be what happens to my emotional baggage.
Yeah.
Well, it hasn't happened yet, and I don't think it's going to happen today.
But that's what keeps us all on edge here.
Is that right?
We love it.
I love that I'm probably the only show where people are like, yeah, we're on edge whenever he's on the air.
When is other he going to blow?
Other shows, they come out, oh, we love listening to them. They're so calming, and they're informative and entertaining. And me, it's like, we're just waiting to hear if he finally loses it. If today is the day where he not only loses his job, but the license, where everything just goes completely, completely and utterly bad. All right, if you were with any teenagers today, this weekend, or if you live with teenagers or young people, because I've heard some of the people I work with in Tony and Tina's wedding are in their young, early 20s, like 23, 24.
That's how old I am.
Is that how old you are,
yeah,
Lisa?
23.
All right, so you probably use some of these terms.
I don't know.
Which I don't understand. Weird words that teens use, and I'm going to, again, use very young adults in this too. 312-981-7200 if you've heard some of these or you have one that really bothers you. I used this one ironically in a tweet a couple weeks ago. The only one who enjoyed it was Cody. And I had only heard a young woman who works in the cast with me use it. Do you know what turnt means, Lisa? Turnt?
Turnt. Let's get turnt.
Turnt.
That's old. That's old news.
Is that an old one?
Like turn up, right? Like let's get drunk.
Like you're being drunk. You're turnt.
Or party.
Yeah. Describes an excessive state of excitement, hype, or overall craziness. When used to describe a person, it might also mean they're intoxicated, either via alcohol or something else. So you're turnt, Roger. Have a couple more glasses of wine to pass over dinner, and you're turnt.
Yeah, I've been turnt a few times.
Have you been turnt a few times?
When I was a lot younger.
We
called it other stuff, but...
Sure, oh yeah.
What'd you call it?
Being hammered, wasted.
Hammered, wasted.
Lit. You sure we're lit up?
Lit has made a comeback.
Has it really?
Yes.
Roger, we're going to be hip again.
Ooh.
That's
so going to
be very exciting.
Keep going.
Lit is actually number two on this list. Used to describe something that is hot and happening. Similar to cool, but with an added emphasis on the fact that it's fresh and current. Oh, much like us, Roger.
Fresh
and current,
fresh.
Right, Lise? Fresh and current. I try not to be fresh because then HR gets involved, and
oh,
I don't need. Yeah, I don't need any.
Well,
of that.
I stay fresh because I get turned over every couple of hours, so keep me fresh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ew.
Turned over or turned over?
Both.
All right. You're like one of those hot dogs at 7-Eleven.
Yes.
Might have been there for a day. Might have been there for a month and a half.
You
we
can't
don't know.
Tell. Looks the same.
Oh, they just keep rolling and rolling. Fam, obviously, that's easy. Group of friends or family. Goals. Now, I thought goals was, you know, the typical definition. What is goals in young person lingo?
I usually hear it as squad goals.
Squad goals, which means?
I don't. Honestly,
so a squad is a group of people.
A squad's like, your friends. Yeah, I don't know when that happened.
It's like goals. I don't know. It's like you see something probably on Instagram or whatever, and then you're like, oh, goals. Like
yes, it's become an adjective. Like you, those are my goals. You
right.
are you. Are, somebody
it's,
actually.
It's stupid stuff. I mean, it's not like. I want to be a lawyer. Goals.
Goals. I saw someone posted, again, a young person that I know. I posted a picture of something for our anniversary, and they said, you are goals. And I was like, I knew what it meant in the context, but I get, but it still, here's the thing, kids. And I was a kid once, a long time ago, back when I didn't eat ham. I understand. We all want our own music. We all want our own terminology. But sometimes you have to listen to what you're saying and say, does it make any sense or does it just make me sound like a goof?
No, but you must have said dumb stuff back in your day.
Not me, Lise. I have always been an expert communicator.
I can't remember the dumb stuff I said.
Oh, well, that's brilliant. I'm going to do some Googling.
It was cool. Cool was always... The one I hated and I never used was boss. Everybody used to say, remember when things were boss, Roger?
Right.
Now it's evolved into, you know, doing it like a boss.
Yeah.
But that's different.
Like a boss.
Like a boss.
Yeah, we said far out and solid.
Why does every word have to be stretched out, too? Like, yes. Or, go, you know...
Like, yes, queen.
I don't... Okay.
I don't know.
Again, everybody, every generation needs to make their mark. I understand that. What did you say, Roger? I'm sorry. I talked.
Far out and solid.
Groovy. Did you ever say groovy?
Groovy, yeah.
I never said groovy.
Yeah. Cool. Everything was cool.
Well, everything was cool. Groovy was, I think, before my time. I was just at the end of groovy.
I think
that was
I
the
think
dirty
cool
hippies from
came
the 60s.
First, and then it turned
cool
into groovy when it became hippie-ish.
Right. Cool stuck around, though.
Yeah, but cool
has endured
was
the
like,
test of time.
Like, the music, like cool, like the Jets, you know, cool,
like West Side Story.
West Side Story,
wow,
real
you are, wow,
cool.
You are, you know, you're making yourself sound so far away from cool right now. But that's okay. I'm with you. I'm with you.
Which is why I wasn't cool back then.
What about thirsty? You know, thirsty. How the
I know what thirsty is.
What
yeah.
is thirsty?
Thirsty is you're just trying too hard, man. Just back off.
Right.
Take it easy. Chill.
Right. You're desperate, impatient.
And how do I know that?
How do you know that, Roger?
Because,
how do you know what thirsty? Because all the young kids in the newsroom tell him he's being too thirsty.
No, because all my students used to tell me I was being too thirsty.
Really? Now, see?
Yep. Because you know how demanding I was as a teacher, and so they said, "Back off, Mr. Banish. You know you're being too thirsty, man. Just." Chill. We got this.
Well, it's also like now it's you're trying too hard.
Yeah,
you're
that's
trying,
what I
you're
think
you're trying
of it
too
as.
Hard for approval. You want
right.
everybody to like you, so you're
or
too
like,
thirsty.
Or in like the going out romance oh. sense, you know, yes. he's thirsty.
Meaning what? He wants to commitment too fast,
yeah.
or he's oh, or he's amorous, too amorous.
I don't. Yes, I would go with the second one there.
That one. All right. Listen, I'm trying. Try to
amorous.
It, he's amorous.
That, we should make that a. That should
Let's
be.
Bring
a
that back.
Yeah,
kids need to bring that back.
Yeah,
was that
got,
ever in?
And perfunctory. I would like that to come back too.
You
other
heard
than
of
in
the,
court.
What the Russian hands and Roman fingers?
Yeah, I think they're doing mornings at B96. I don't. I don't know what I think, or they're doing a country station now, aren't they?
I think so.
Anyway, I think they're doing country. All right, let's do this. We'll get to some more of these. If you have some of these terms that you hear your kids saying and you can't understand it, you don't know what it means, do you want to know what low-key means or thought? Do you know what a thought is, Lise?
I do.
All right, we'll get to that, too. Lise can explain
actually,
that
my
one.
Friend has a podcast called Food for Thoughts.
Really?
I'll tell you about it
oh, well,
after the break.
Yes, look at that tease from Lise.
Well, it's time for Bill and Wendy's huge, huge, huge after Easter show. Always one of our favorites. Just one day after Easter, we're going to talk about Easter and Passover and the Blackhawks and the Bulls and them being in the playoffs. We'll tell you what's happening on planet Earth and maybe other planets too.
Sounds like someone has a sugar buzz from eating all those peeps.
Yeah, could you tell?
It's Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. Can you
A few years ago, my wife and I went shopping for amazing quality luxury bedding we could actually afford. And what did we find? Nothing. Hi, I'm Scott Tannen. Missy and I started Bull & Branch because we want you to be able to afford the best bedding in the world. By cutting out the middlemen and only selling online at bullandbranch.com, our award-winning sheets cost less than half of designer brands and are twice the quality. Every set is crafted from 100% organic cotton. They get softer and softer over time. That's why we have thousands of five-star reviews and even three U.S. presidents have Bull & Branch sheets. There's no risk. Try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back for a full refund. Go to bullandbranch.com today for $50 off your first set of sheets, plus free shipping when you use promo code HOME. That's $50 off plus free shipping right now at bullandbranch.com. Promo code HOME. bullandbranch.com spelled B-O-L-L and branch.com. Promo code HOME.
Message and data rates may apply.
What's the scariest thing about going to the dentist? Opening your mouth or opening your wallet? Because just a simple cleaning can cost $100, and things like root canals can cost you hundreds more. If you don't have dental insurance to help, text KIT to 321-321 for a free information kit from Physicians Mutual Insurance Company. This isn't a discount plan or preventive-only coverage. This is real dental insurance that helps pay for checkups right away, so you can call today and get your teeth cleaned tomorrow. Plus, it helps cover the more expensive procedures you might need down the road. Fillings, crowns, bridges, even costly dentures. There's no deductible and no annual maximum. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired or on Medicare. There are no networks, so you can choose any dentist you'd like. That's right, any dentist you want. Text KIT to 321-321 for a free information kit with all the details. That's KIT to 321-321. Again, text KIT to 321-321.
Be honest. Last time you saw your parents, were you afraid they might fall? If they do fall, do you think they could cope without help? If you're shaking your head, this message could save their life. We're Bay Alarm Medical, the number one rated help on demand service for seniors. We want to give you important safety information for free to help keep your parents safe at home. Simply call 1-800-600-4179. Bay Alarm Medical's alert service gives seniors instant access to the help they need at a touch of a button, 24/7, contacting family, friends, neighbors, or 911 services if needed without false alarms. Today's life-saving free information contains crucial tips we've learned keeping seniors safe for over 70 years. This free information can help prevent falls and make day-to-day life safer at home. For this important free information, plus a free quote on America's number one medical alert service, call 1-800-600-4179. That's 1-800-600-4179.
Yeah. Police told me this band is LMFAO. I knew that, actually. I'm not so far out of the realm. All right, we're talking about these weird words and terms that teens and young adults are using now. In case you hear some of these when you're out and about and you go, what are these kids talking about? And I know when I say that, I sound like a crazy old man. But we all have those things where, you know, the younger generation comes up with stuff and they don't want us to know, because once we know, if I start using some of these terms, if I tell people they're being thirsty, or if I, talk about being turnt, suddenly it is, you got to move on to something else. Adam has one that bothers him. Hi, Adam.
How are you?
I'm good. What's your, what's the phrase?
My phrase is like nails on a chalkboard for me is totes my goats, or totes, or whatever, it's, some variant of that.
Yeah, if you're going to say that, why can't you just say totally, right?
Yeah, or not say it at all.
Or not say it at all, which is probably best. Now, Lee said you didn't know that that came from a movie?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so
yeah, I didn't know that it came from a movie either, and I would say it. My friend would say it, so I would say it. And then I saw I Love You, Man with Paul Rudd and Totes
and
McGuts. There it was. I was like, whoa.
I'm with you, Adam. It just sounds dumb.
There was one more word that gets me. I won't say the other part, but it's amaze.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And there's another.
Amazeballs. Yeah. So, yeah. Everybody, okay. Everything's amazeball. Can it just be amazing? Right. Nope. No, can't have that. Got to throw the other part on it. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Now, before the break, this one I had never heard until I was reading this list. Never heard of it because I'm old school and I use different derogatory terms. This is a thought. Is it thought? Thought. T-H-O-T.
Thought.
Thought.
I think.
Is that?
Thought.
All right.
Thought.
And what is it? I'll let you describe what a thought.
Can I say that?
Well, you, yeah.
That hoe over there.
So it's like, right? it's like calling somebody a hoe, but now they're a thought?
Well.
Where does it come? But what words were combined to make thought from, you know?
I don't know the only reason I know what that means is my friend, as I said before the break, started a podcast called Food for Thought.
Do thoughts eat special food?
Well,
a lot of salami. What are they
eating?
Hot dogs?
He lives in New York and he works for an up and coming gay man magazine called Hello Mister.
Okay.
And so this is like it's him and three other gay writers. So it's like a podcast about, like gay men, dating culture in New York. So pretty niche, but awesome podcast. Anyway.
and now you got the plug in for
And
him.
Then, so their thoughts. I don't really get it.
Yeah, I don't get
that.
It either. It says the, what I have here is someone, usually a girl who has lots of love interests, kind of like a more socially acceptable way of saying ho. That's the definition that I have. I don't understand it, but that's all right. Like fire, I get it means something is hot, exciting. Do we blame Taylor Swift for Squad? Is she the one who started Squad?
Maybe. Is that where? Was
that's,
what you're
that's how
of?
I always.
I keep thinking that Squad was predates that because
well, the mod
there were dance.
Squad.
No, I'm talking about
oh,
dance squads.
Going all the way back to the 60s. Peggy Lipton. There were dance squads.
Dance squads.
Sure, break words, dance squads.
Break, right. Groups that would go out and they would. Because it all used right. to be individuals that would
sure.
do the dances. And then they got together and they were competitions between squads. Between groups of dancers.
Well, now it's your group of friends. What about high key, Lise? You know what high key means?
That I do not.
Ah, see, maybe you're too old for
high key.
Oh, wait,
oh, yeah, oh, like low key, but high key.
Ah, well, that's no. not a definition. That's just
oh,
saying,
I just figured
like,
it
let's
out.
Put that.
So what is it?
Saying something high key is saying it in a way that makes it clear you don't care that everyone knows it. It's a bold declaration. It might also be extremely obvious to everyone already, but it's something you just feel the need to say. It's the opposite of low key, which I guess is like being on the DL,
yeah,
keeping everything
I say
on the
low
down
key,
low.
Low key all the time. High key sounds stupid.
So low key, you want it so everybody doesn't know it. Well, that
right.
makes sense. It's like keep it on the DL.
DL. Ooh, there's a good one.
Sure, I like the DL. I keep everything on the DL, except here. Then everything's on the UPL.
Disabled list? What?
What about sus? Know what that means? I like having somebody young here who has her thumb on the pulse of the youth as opposed to the rest of us who have our thumb on the pulse of, you know, just checking that we have a pulse.
Exactly.
Do you know what sus means?
Suspect.
Yeah, very good. Used to describe something that's shady or scandalous.
Oh, suspicious.
Or suspicious. Or suspicious.
I've never used that one or heard that one.
Hundo P. This is the dumbest. Hundo
what?
P.
Okay, no, the only time I've heard a hundo is there's a wrestler in my class, and every time he took a test before he started taking the test, this is in high school, he would say, guaranteed a hundo. But no, I don't know what that is.
All right, I like that. And to me, a hundo was always a $100 bill. You give somebody a hundo. Hundo P is short, but it's really longer for 100%. Again...
That is the weirdest.
It's so dumb.
Come on.
But listen, Roger.
Jiminy.
If we got into the minds of the kids.
I'd get lost.
And I just keep saying kids, just because I know people are like, why are you picking on the kids?
You know, it's so weird. Our parents were thinking the same thing
probably.
When we were kids.
Somebody sent a text. I'm going to scroll down to it. I was in the groove with the termage of the 70s when cool was bitching and chicks were bombs. So torqued, solid, man. Peace. Right on, Tony. Tony sending that text in.
Awesome.
And see, Lise might not have understood it. I got exactly what Tony was laying down.
Yeah.
He took the gave me the 411 and I took it. I still use 411.
411.
It's a very old. It's like 90s. That's as close as I've got. Clapback. You know what clapback means? And it's not a derogatory
no
term for a woman whose shirt's too
isn't
tight.
Isn't it like a high five, but you know,
nope.
Like
a pat
to,
on
no?
the back? Like
nope.
consolatory?
Oh. Nope, nope, nope. Old people. It's a snappy comeback. The kind of response where you know exactly what to say to make the other person steam. And it's the perfect way to win an argument.
That's for, just comeback.
You know what? They used to call that heating or heat.
What?
Seriously, about
burn?
10, 15 years
burn.
Ago.
Well, again,
when
right.
you came back with a comeback and really put the person down, it was, you were heating them.
No, you were burning them.
You were
them.
Burning them.
Yeah,
Roger.
No, but they. Well, my students said heat.
Oh, okay.
Are you sure you had students?
Yes, I do.
This was not just group therapy somewhere.
You were just being thirsty.
No, yeah, you were just being thirsty with kids on the street
no.
at the park. You weren't thirsty AF.
No.
We'll leave AF. Everybody knows what AF means. Lise went, no, I don't. Oh, yeah, I do. Turtlet fam. What's let's see if I got another one. V. What about V? Now, see what.
Very.
Yes. And why can't you just say very?
V cool.
V.
Really? V cool?
V hot. V.
V turnt?
Nice.
Are you V turnt?
No.
No, not now. You're working.
True.
But why can't we just say very? I
because
guess we don't have
two syllables.
It's
I don't
a lot. Yeah,
that.
That's a lot. Who's
and
got time to say very?
Extra letters to type out.
That's insanity. There's absolutely no reason to say something like that. Shade. We all know what that is. You're going to throw shade on somebody. What about savage? What savage is, Lise?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like wild. No.
Again.
Oh, like hungry?
No.
Savage.
Good try.
No, Fred Savage.
No, Fred Savage, great actor, fine director.
Loved him
on the, what was the last show he was on with Rob Lowe, the attorney show. That was very funny. Now I can't remember the name of it. The Grinder. He was very good on The Grinder.
Oh, the two brothers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good on that. No, Savage, someone who says something without a filter. If you're acting savage, you're probably being more raw in public with your words or actions than people are comfortable with, though it can also be a compliment if you're arguing with someone and drop a particularly great insult. It means you don't care what other people think.
Is Wilden on that list? Or is Wilden? That just something my friends say?
No, what is Wilden?
Wilden. I don't know. It's like wild and Wilden.
Like wild. Like you're doing something wild?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
Okay, maybe it. Well, that's going to be on the next list.
Yeah, again. What about woke? You know what woke means? Again, it doesn't mean like you get up in the morning, like you woke up.
Woke.
Woke, Roger. Woke. I know what you woke. What did your students say 28 years ago, Roger?
I don't remember about the
of
woke.
Of course not woke.
It wasn't 28. It was only,
I have
nine.
No idea.
It's 23
is woke
years.
Something like swole?
No, swole is when you're at the gym. You get all
right.
Swole
yeah.
up. No, that's nothing like that.
Nope.
Wow, see? We've stumped the millennial.
Wow, that's
new
amazing.
Game, new game
sorry,
here on the show.
All the millennials out there,
the
like,
every
what millenni- the
yeah,
heck?
Every well, because I'm huge with millennials. Everybody
oh, yeah.
knows that.
Yeah,
when people think millennials, they think this
on
show.
Their, on their
Sunday
yeah,
nights.
Right.
Sure. They don't even know what a radio is. AM, huh? What? That's the morning. I'm not listening to anybody in the morning. I got podcasts to listen to. I'm going to listen to, you know, a beat poet doing spoken word on some app.
Mm-hmm.
Woke means that you're knowledgeable, aware, and with it. No wonder none of us knew it.
None of us are woke.
You're not naive about the topic at hand and are above all smart and tactful. Again, perfect reason we didn't know it. It's the exact opposite of ignorance and is usually used as such. It was used to describe being aware about racism and police violence, after the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson. And in the ensuing years, it's been more used more broadly, even ironically. Who's calling me? People bother me. So that's what woke means. I learned a new one today, too. Triggered. The hashtag triggered. You use that, Roger? You know what that means?
Not in the current sense of the word, I'm sure.
Everybody did. It means you had to go off on somebody because something you heard or saw offended you. So you've been triggered. Triggered. Yeah. A lot of weirdness.
I see a rabbit downstairs.
Where? Huh? Oh, you can see us?
I can see you, yeah.
Well, we
can
see you. I don't know what's going on.
Hi, Rabbit.
All right, so Karen Conti did make it. Despite all the rumors to the contrary, she did make it in. So what does that mean for you? It means you need to get your legal questions in now, 312-981-7200, because after the news, Karen will be answering said questions and dishing out cogent advice. So get your questions in now. Even if you're turnt, we'll still decipher what you're saying and get it all figured out. After the 8 o'clock news on a Sunday night, you know what happens. Karen Conti comes in, she joins me, Brian Noonan, and she helps you out by answering your legal questions at 312-981-7200. Do not wait. Do not think to yourself, well, I'll get it in sometime before 9 o'clock, because you'll wait too long, and then you'll be out of luck. You are in the, you've got the bunny ears on. The rest of the costume is not what I expect when I hear the word, hey, there's a female bunny coming in. I wanted the black and the tail and the number on the hip.
Not for me, you don't.
Not you? All right, well,
I'm a little too old for that.
Is that right?
If you notice that I have mascara running down my face, I was coming in terrible traffic, and I was listening to your ham story. And, you know, it gets worse every year for me.
It's a sad story, isn't it?
What I thought I would do is just present you with a little Easter gift.
Oh, don't even know. Is that really a ham sandwich?
It's a ham sandwich with jelly beans
you
on the side.
You know I'm not going to eat it.
Isn't that a beautiful ham sandwich?
No.
Can you see that?
Can anyone see that? I don't know if we hold it up. I don't know where the
I say we don't let him out of that chair until he eats it.
I think so. Otherwise, he's not going to get his paycheck.
I'd eat the bread and the Swiss cheese, but that ham looks like it's been in a vending machine since 1972. I think Eisenhower made that ham sandwich. The jelly beans look tasty.
Go ahead and insult me, Brian.
No, listen, thank you. Did you make that yourself?
I went into the store and got it myself.
I was going to say, I know you didn't have that ham at your house.
I slaved over a hot fast food place to
No, exactly. Well, thank you for the thought, but there's not a chance in hell I'm eating that ham sandwich.
Someone's going to eat it here.
Somebody will eat it. Sure. Yeah. It's a radio station. I bet Aubrey will grab it on his way out, and he's welcome to it.
Aubrey is welcome to it,
or one of the fine producers. Jerry, you want a ham sandwich? No, Jerry doesn't like ham sandwiches either. Yeah, it is a sad story. It's one of those things. But, Karen, we've all had hard times in our lives. We overcome them, we move on. Or
pretty much.
We dwell on them and mine them for comedy every year.
That's true.
Or
we dwell on them and we sue people.
Right. Now, could I sue my mother for some sort of psychological... But it could be argued that I have a lot of psychological issues, and maybe we could trace them all back to that.
I say there's some contributory negligence.
Wow.
Statute of limitations right now, problems.
Yeah, right now her friends are like, oh my God, Brian's going to sue you. Nah, I'm not going to sue. I said, I forgive her. She did the best she could, you know.
With what she had.
Right. Well, she had six guys and
that's
her,
really,
and it was, you know.
That's not fair.
It doesn't seem fair, but again, that was out of my hands. That's beyond my pay grade. I can't deal with that. All right, lots of things going on this week. Almost none of them good if you're an airline based in Chicago.
Scorpions people being dragged.
Yeah, they dragged the doctor. Then there was a story I just read that a bride and groom were dragged off in Texas. They were flying back, and there was an issue. They thought somebody was sleeping in their row, so they moved to another row. And United said, well, you're trying to take a better seat without paying. And they said no, and so they were dragged off. United having a bad, bad week.
Well, we're going to hear a lot about bad stories from airlines for a while.
As we should, because let's be honest, airlines are terrible.
Yeah, we hate them, don't we?
Because...
You have no control, Brian.
You have no control.
None.
You give up everything. They needed to be bailed out. The government bailed them out. And they've done nothing but screw the public ever since.
That's right.
It's nickel and diming you here and there. The...
Crummy food.
If you get any food. I was on our flight to Punta Cana. You didn't even get a pop. All right. I don't need the full big hot meal. But if you offer a soft drink or something.
How about some Fritos? How about a piece of pizza?
At least Southwest, they give you soft drinks and a couple bags of chips or peanuts or something. This one, $3 for a can of pop. $3 for a can of pop? No, I'll drink my spit for the 4 hours. I'm not giving you $3. Out of principle, I'm not giving anybody $3 for a can of pop. So there's that. There's some. Listen, I know not all customer service people are awful. Some are. They have a hard job, too, because they're dealing with disgruntled customers because you've made us so angry. Now we're being rude, which is not right, but we're being met with more rudeness coming back at us.
Absolutely.
The whole industry is just horrible. Horrible. So I have no sympathy for United, but I know you've been talking a lot about this. First of all, let's get to the nuts and bolts of this. Do the airlines have the right to bump us?
They absolutely have the right to bump us. The question was this a bump? Because there's two different things under your contract, and that is to be denied entrance, you know, and that's bumping you off the flight, or once you're sitting, denied passage. Okay, which is a different thing. And what he did supposedly probably wouldn't warrant bumping him off the flight once he's seated. However, we don't really know what he was doing. And ultimately, the captain does have authority to do what he or she wants to do if there's unruly passengers and the like. Otherwise, you could have a really bad and dangerous flight if you had people being unruly and you didn't have an ability to throw someone off the plane. So the question is, how unruly was he?
Yeah,
we don't know that.
That's just it. We don't know. No. And we know from reports, again, we don't know. We weren't there. I wasn't there. That they were offering people buyouts. And we've all heard that before. But they usually lowball you. Again, we know now in subsequent days, we've all learned, the airlines have a cap. Everyone is different. But they could go up to, let's say, $1,300 or $800. They were offering $200. Well, if you have to be somewhere, a $200 voucher is not... That's not good enough. If I have to be at my kid's graduation or a wedding, or if I'm a doctor, or even if I just want to get home.
Right.
Sometimes a $200 voucher isn't enough.
No, and they have other kind of vouchers, too. They have restaurant vouchers.
Yeah.
They have hotel vouchers. They have all kinds of stuff they can give out if they want. So that was their bad. They should have gotten someone off the plane who wanted to get off the plane. And I don't know why they waited so long. I don't know why these four people had to be on the plane. Why did they just decide at the last minute? All those things are wrong and bad, and that started the avalanche of problems. But really, I'm focusing on the police that came in, the airport police, because that to me is where we have serious liability.
And who is liable then? The airline? The city? Who's liable for all of those?
I would say all of them. I think because United brought them in and United maybe told them get the guy off the plane. Mm-hmm. Again, the police have to use reasonable force. This is just like any other police department.
Sure.
Now, let's just say this guy committed a crime, right?
Right.
Once you put him in custody, you have to keep him safe. Mm-hmm. And you have to transport him in a way that is safe. Remember that case out in the East Coast where they put the kid in the ambulance in the back, and by the time he his neck was broken or whatever. And so we have this idea that he should have been transported safely. You don't drag someone down an aisle because, you know, because his injuries were obviously sustained by being dragged.
Yes.
So maybe the right way to do it, if he was truly that unruly, was to put him in handcuffs and to escort him out in a way that was a little bit right. more orderly.
It doesn't make sense. But now we've got his lawyer comes on and said, well, we might sue. You know there's going to be lawsuits. We know this. But this case is, there's so much publicity. If you're United's lawyers, how do you handle it? And if you're his lawyers, how do you handle it?
From a United standpoint, I've always said this, there's two parts to a case like this, and that's the PR and that's the legal. Mm-hmm. And that's why you saw that horrible apology that Mr. Oscar came out with at the beginning, because it was just words that made no sense. But you can't, in a lot of cases, you can take an apology and make that into something that's culpable. So that in court, let's say if the thing went to trial, if you said, I'm sorry, we did a bad thing, those words can be used against the airline in federal court.
Okay?
In state court, there's other rules where you can apologize and it's not admissible in court. But in federal court, where these cases go, those words could conceivably come into evidence. So that's why the lawyers were probably saying, say something sort of vanilla, and the PR people were saying, probably say something stronger so it sounds like you mean it. So there was a real conflict there.
Make us believe that you mean it.
Exactly. So those are hard things to do because obviously they want to settle this case, Brian, and the fact that it hasn't been filed yet.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Are you surprised that there hasn't? And why, if you're this doctor, why would you wait?
Well,
because you would think, well, the case is right there. Nothing new is going to come of it.
These cases usually get brought right away, and then they ask questions later. But my guess is United is talking to the doctor's lawyer and saying, listen, we're going to settle this. Let's just meet next week when this all settles down. Let's meet in a room. Let's hash it out.
No need to file.
No need to file a lawsuit. That's just going to bring more publicity and more problems. So just if you give me a week, let's try to settle, and if not, then you bring your suit. That would be my guess.
And if there is a payoff, and we see this in a lot of cases, if there's a settlement, not a payoff, a settlement, there's usually a confidentiality agreement.
Yes.
How does that play in? Do those last forever? Are there different lengths of time? I mean, we all understand the basic principle. You can't disclose the details of the settlement.
Right. You can disclose the fact that it was settled, and you can disclose it to your spouse and your accountant and your lawyer and whoever else you need as a professional to process your taxes or what have you. But you can't disclose it to the public. And usually what it says that if you do disclose it in violation of that confidentiality agreement, you could forfeit that settlement. So most people really do keep things confidential. Yeah. Sometimes you see people with their motor mouths going, but generally they keep it quiet.
And what about United, because or any big corporation, they settle, but then they don't admit guilt. Is that a standard thing? We'll settle, but we didn't do anything wrong, but here's X amount of dollars.
Yeah, the settlement agreement will specifically state that. This is what was alleged. We deny all of these things. And listen, you know,
isn't that silly, though? We deny everything. Yes. We did nothing wrong. Why'd you give him $1 million? Because we're nice.
Yeah.
Because it's Saturday.
You know, this whole thing is going to be interesting because I think it's bigger than just this case. And I think that what I'm concerned about just a little bit from the airline standpoint is, what stops an unruly customer now from just being unruly and saying, go ahead, take me off the plane. I'll sue you.
Yeah.
You know, because people are drinking, right? Because they're under stress or they're waiting and they're sitting in the airport. What are you doing? You're having your cocktails. And people get really upset, and they get even more upset when they're drinking. And I've seen people get unruly, and it's not pretty. When you're in that enclosed environment, it's very dangerous to have people who are volatile. And so my question is going to be, is this going to set a very bad precedent that you just refuse to do what the flight attendants tell you, and you can get away with it?
I'm wondering. I doubt it. I mean, but it is an interesting thought.
Because, as you know, when someone tells you in the airlines to do something, you should probably do it. I mean, whether you have a lawsuit later, fine. But
I agree. If they're telling you something about safety or something like that, but if they're telling you the computer randomly picked you to be off the plane, I would have a hard time.
I would have a hard time too.
I'm not gonna.
But then what are you going to do? Scream and yell and get dragged down the aisle? I wouldn't personally do that.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to be dragged down the aisle.
I don't want anyone seeing my stomach.
You know, listen, I don't care about that. I always fly commando in a caftan. So you start dragging me down the aisle, things are going to get uglier than they were when you came to my seat. All right, Karen Conti is here. Do you have a legal question? 312-981-7200. Get them in quickly. We've already got some phone calls, some texts. We will start answering your questions on the other side. It is WGN. Brian Noonan, Karen Conti, Sunday night on 720 WGN. Karen comes in and she answers your legal questions because legal advice is hard to come by if you're, you know, listening to the radio. What are you going to do? You going to get some top 40 DJ going to tell you what to no. This is where you come
Wolfman
for legal
Jack,
advice.
Don't give legal advice.
I'm not listening to Wolfman Jack's advice on anything from haberdashery to legal legal stories. All right. We've got a unique name and a unique story. Pooja is joining us. Hi, Pooja. Welcome to WGN.
Hello, how are you this evening?
We're well, thanks. What's your question?
So I'm a pediatrician, and I've been a very good pediatrician for the past 10 years in the state of Illinois, serving the Southside community. And I had a brief altercation with a law professor in Chicago years ago, in 2012, and it was a verbal altercation. We had some unpleasant words exchanged. Perhaps there were a few emails that were disgruntled from my side. He turned in to the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulations. He pulled political and social strings and spoke with Chief Attorney Prosecutor Laura E. Forrester and asked her to file a grievance against my medical license. He has filed 5 to 6 frivolous lawsuits against me. He teaches criminal law, and he has cost my family upwards of $150,000 in false allegations that have all been dismissed, and now I'm unemployed. I was being credentialed for my third year on the job, and currently, in the eyes of the state of Illinois, I'm guilty until proven innocent. I have 0 malpractice judgments under my name. I'm another doctor who is being dragged through the mud and here in the state of Illinois, no different than Dr. Dow. I am also Asian. I am also being prosecuted for no damn reason, and I have done nothing to any of my patients. I have been a phenomenal pediatrician for 10 years.
Pooja, this is one of the things that's hard about the system, you know, in that you can make allegations in a court of law, especially when you're an attorney. You can file them yourself. You don't even need an attorney to do it. So if he wanted to reach some sort of or get his pound of flesh against you, he files these suits. If they were frivolous, you could have gotten damages in terms of sanctions. I take it you had to hire a lawyer to defend those things. Well, that sounds like it's already been done. As to the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation, that's the organization that licenses doctors and hairdressers and a lot of other different professions, many realtors and the like. And, you know, you need a lawyer when you go through that process because it's very important. I mean, we have our own organization, and if there's a complaint or a charge made against you, you got to protect your license. And, with a person with credentials bringing these kinds of complaints against you, you've got to defend yourself. And now, I don't know what else to say except get yourself a good lawyer and fight as hard as you can and hope this guy goes away.
I mean, I guess my concern is with the Attorney Registration Disciplinary Committee, there would be no way in God's green earth that they would take a complaint that comes from the street, that comes from a friend, against somebody who has done absolutely nothing criminal, you know, to their patients. I mean, to their legal clients. So how is it that the state of Illinois is creating harm in somebody? I'm like a 40-year-old young woman who's self-supporting, and I'm unemployed because of this case.
That's unfortunate.
Morally reprehensible.
Yeah, and it doesn't relate to your ability to practice medicine. When you're an attorney, you're held to different standards in public, actually. So if you said something or did something inappropriate or you were, you know, being harsh with people, that could be an issue because you're holding the lawyer profession in disrepute those are the words we use. All I can say, doctor, is to keep fighting on it and hopefully they'll understand that for this guy's kind of goofy. If he's goofy enough to file 5 lawsuits against
you. What I want to raise here is a bias towards Asians in medicine in general. There's a bias in this country, and I am a recipient of this. There's no way that somebody who's working hard 40 to 50 hours a week should have cases like this. If this was put in, I would argue if this had been put in against a Caucasian or an African-American physician, they never would have taken the case. There's some sort of bias, and specifically with Laura E. Forrester, she has been famous for this. She had a case where she got a co-attorney.
Well, Pooja, you know what? I don't know about, I can't speak to that, but Karen, is if these cases are frivolous, does Pooja have grounds to countersue,
in a lawsuit? Yes, you have the ability, if it's completely frivolous and it has to be really frivolous, you can get sanctions, meaning your attorney's fees that were generated in relation to having to defend and dismiss those cases. When you're in these organizations that license you, there's usually no lawsuit because they want the public wants should be able to bring charges against doctors and lawyers and real estate agents and manicurists and whoever else are licensed to get the bad people off the street. So they don't punish people who bring, quote, frivolous charges. Does that mean that every client or every customer brings a charge that has merit? No, the answer is no, but you still have to defend them. Mm. Unfortunately, you do. The problem is, you know, they make mistakes. Those organizations may have a bias, as Pooja says. I haven't experienced it as she has, and I'm going to let her say those words.
Good luck with that, Pooja.
Yeah, get a lawyer. There are lawyers that just practice only in those organizations.
Yeah, that's a very
unusual situation. Yeah.
Before we go to the news, can a judge order me to use available credit on a credit card to make any types of payments?
I'm thinking the answer to that is in a divorce, because yes, in a divorce, the judge could order you to use your credit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The statute specifically, or law specifically says that if there's an ability to get loans and ability to use a credit card, then yes, you can be ordered to do that.
And is that just for divorces, or could it be for any sort of... anything from traffic to
I don't see any other place. I'm thinking right now, but it would take me a while. The only one that I can think of right offhand would be in the family law
for
arena.
Support or
yes, exactly.
Or spousal support, whatever.
Yes.
Whatever.
But I can't imagine another scenario where a judge says you have to put this on your credit card.
Yeah, that would be, you know.
Yeah. The judge can order you to pay something.
Oh, sure.
But to specifically use your credit card as opposed to getting a loan from a friend or using a bank, you know, savings or something, I'm not aware of that.
All right. Well, another interesting question. If you have a legal question, whether it's interesting or run-of-the-mill, you know, regular old legal questions are fine, too. They don't have to be exotic. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. That's how you get in to talk to Karen and get the answer to your question. We will get to more of your questions on the other side of the news. But don't wait too long, because Karen is only here till 9 o'clock. If we have time, I have an interesting legal story for you about Walmart and a university professor. And him suing them for labeling him something he is not. So I will show you that, too. So a lot to get to, but first we must go up to the newsroom. I know I'm like 20 seconds early, Roger. Is that all right? Are you all ready? Or do I need to pad for the 16 seconds?
Let me calm myself down.
I know it's very well. Now, by the time we stop our chit-chat, we're going to be right on time, which, again, is very strange. Hope you're enjoying your Easter, your Passover, your Sunday, whatever you are enjoying. And hopefully you are not in a legal conundrum. But if you are, or if you have one, Karen Conti is here to help you. 312-981-7200. We'll get a couple of these out of the way, and then we've got these other stories. Real quick, because I know the answer to this one is going to be fast. At 14 years old in 1980, I was hit by a car while walking. My parents didn't want to sue. I am now 50 and have arthritis and lots of pain. Do I have any options?
Statute of limitations has run. You do have some extra time if you're injured when you're not an adult. You have years after you become an adult to sue, some extra time. But under no calculation of any type anywhere in this country would you have the right to sue at age 50.
Because it's 37 years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time.
All right, sorry about that. Let's go to Joe. He's been hanging on. Hi, Joe. You're on WGN.
Might I say, very interesting and helpful segment.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. Listen, I haven't heard too much about it recently, but one of Governor Rauner's prime platform, if you will, was workers' compensation. His objective is to make business a little more business-friendly, if you will, and therefore produce more jobs. Your opinion on workers' compensation changes in the law, pro or con, and why?
I'm not up to speed on exactly what his proposals are. Do you know what they are, Joe?
Not in minute detail, but basically he thinks the claims are too broad-based and they lay small business open to a wide range of lawsuits.
Well, first of all, I'm always suspect when I hear limit or injured people's right to receive money. A lot of people think workers' comp is fraud and that people fake injuries, and there's been billboards that, the insurance companies pay for. Very few people who are injured on the job actually bring workers' comp suits. That's the truth.
Well, they're afraid of losing their
job. They don't want to lose
their
job. Most people want to go to...
Joe.
Yes, thank you, Joe. Most people want to go to work every day.
Sure.
And they're not only afraid of losing their job, their boss might say, oh, you're injured, or you're no good anymore. Mm-hmm. People want to go to work. They just do. And you got some lazy people, and you got some fakers, and you're going to always have those people,
right? Sure, it doesn't matter what program you've got.
But for the most part, workers' comp works. And what happens in a workers' comp case is you have limited damages. It's not like you can get pain and suffering and all the big damages you get in a personal injury suit.
Right.
In exchange, if you are injured on the job, doesn't matter if it's your fault or not, you get these sorts of compensations. So, and the whole purpose of it is to make the workplace safe.
Okay.
So that, you know, if you don't use your goggles and you get injured, the employer probably should have been telling you to wear your goggles, even though you were maybe at fault for not wearing them. And I think a lot that rubs people the wrong way. On the other hand, it does keep the workplace safe. I mean, from the time that it was instituted in Illinois way back when, we have now very safe workplaces, along with OSHA and other organizations that monitor these things. My thought is that, and number three, I guess I would say, is that all businesses are required to have workers' comp insurance. So everyone is insured for this. If you're not, then they're violating the law. And insurance is expensive, but it's not hugely expensive. Like, for instance, in my firm, I have to have workers' comp insurance in case someone falls at the workplace. Not too many people fall in a
legal
workplace.
Well, you push a lot of people down. I know you're very, very difficult
aggressive.
To work for.
I am. So they say.
You know. You want it your way, and I don't blame you. It's your business.
That's
whatever.
Right. That's right. I got to get them tough. But again, you know, I don't know what his proposition is. I don't know how he's going to lower the price of insurance. I would say talk to the insurance companies and have them lower their rates. You know, insurance companies never get the raw end of this.
No.
It's the workers. It's the people who are injured. And when you're injured on the job and you can't support your family and you're making only 3/4 of what you're making when you're off of work, and maybe they are, maybe they aren't paying your medical bills, you know, this is really hard.
Yeah.
Some people lose everything.
And
this is the only safety net. So I'm pro worker, and I think workers' comp works just fine, and I don't know that we need to do anything about it.
All right. From the 847, do I have to pay opposing counsel's fees if I lose an appeal?
In almost every case that I can think of, the answer would be no. The only exceptions would be if there is some contract that says that you have to pay the other side if you lose. And that would have to be specifically in a contract, like a real estate contract, maybe in a divorce. If you're a spouse that's the earning spouse, maybe you would have to pay for the other side's fees. Those are the only two things I can, or unless it's a completely frivolous appeal.
Okay.
And then there would be sanctions that have to be completely crazy, sanctionable, frivolous appeals.
Sounds good. From the 773, is there malpractice here?
Is there malpractice?
Can you sue for malpractice here?
Well, I'm sorry.
I guess here in Illinois, can you sue for malpractice?
Malpractice, of course you can.
So,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know the answer, but people text it and I'm going to ask.
There's all kinds of malpractice. You can sue doctors for malpractice. You can sue accountants for malpractice. You can sue lawyers for malpractice. And all that means is it's negligence. That means that you made a mistake as a professional that went below the standard of care that we have in Chicago, and that it caused damage, and that you were out money as a result of that. And that's malpractice.
All right. A divorce question from the 815. My wife and I love each other. My wife was diagnosed with MS 5 years ago. We decided to keep my wife home to raise our babies. This caused my wife to fall short paying Social Security. Now that she has this incredibly difficult problem, we have been told by lawyers and the Social Security office to get divorced for SSI benefits. Is this legal? What would you suggest?
First of all, I have no opinion on how a divorce would affect the ability to get Social Security disability. I don't understand that unless because she would not be married and there would be no dependent, the monthly benefits are going to be higher if she's not married. But I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
I don't even know the answer to that question. Is it legal? People can get married and divorced for any reason they want. No one's going to speculate. No one's going to say this is a sham. But if there is a better benefit by being divorced, you might consider doing that. There's also a lot of benefits, though, being married.
Right.
There's tax benefits. There's estate planning benefits. And if you have insurance through your husband's work and you're not married, married anymore, you may not be able to get health insurance. So before you go and do this, you better get somebody to really give you some
advice. Who would they? What kind of lawyer would they talk to? Would it be? Would they even talk to a lawyer? Would it be an accountant? Who should they turn to?
You would probably talk to a bunch of different people. You probably talk to an estate planning lawyer, someone who does wills. You might want to talk to a family law divorce lawyer who might have some specialty expertise in, say, taxes and things like that. And of course, you're going to talk to your Social Security lawyer as well.
All right, very good. Matthew has a text question. My brother passed away and he didn't leave a will. He has money in the bank to pay for all of his services. I am the last surviving member of our family and I need to have access to that money. I was told at the bank that I need a lawyer to be named assessor to his account. What do I need to bring with me when I go to see a lawyer?
I think the lawyer's going to tell you what to bring. You're probably going to need the death certificate of your brother. I'm sorry that he passed. Probably some proof that you are related to him. And I don't know if you need to bring your brother's birth certificate and maybe your birth certificate. You may even, probably Social Security card. I would imagine that's something that they're going to need down the line. And then all the all the bank information, and probably you're going to be named as some sort of successor or maybe power of attorney. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to do it. I don't know. I've seen this problem over and over again, which just leads me to tell everybody to get a will. I don't care how old you are, to get a will as soon as you possibly can. I have a case now where the mother left a bunch of money that went into that Illinois Treasurer Fund, right? Because unclaimed money. And he was the same thing as Matthew was. He was the last surviving person in the family, and it's been very hard to get that money. We know he's entitled to it, but we keep bringing documents. We keep getting birth certificates. We get death certificates. We're trying to prove that he's the only remaining heir. And it's hard to do that sometimes.
So what kind of attorney?
You know, you probably want some estate planning lawyer or someone who's just got some expertise at getting unclaimed money. Matthew, if you want to give me a call, I can try to give you some people who might be able to help you.
This is an interesting question, and I can't wait to hear your answer to this. My wife was told by a doctor 5 days before Christmas that she was HIV positive. In a few weeks, they told her it was wrong. Does she have a case?
Yeah, these cases are brought all the time. Did you say 5 days?
5 days before Christmas, she was told that
And how long did she think she had?
A few weeks.
So the question is, when you get this kind of wrong information, how does it affect you? And is it something that's so outrageous that it could affect you to the point where it caused you damages? And these kind of cases, like when someone says your husband died and it really wasn't true, or you have some loathsome disease. We call these loathsome diseases.
Right.
That's what the law calls them. It's not what I call them. So, and those kinds of things have been deemed to be actionable. The question here, though, is it happened for 2 weeks, okay?
Yeah.
And for 2 weeks, you had this, oh my gosh, this overwhelming, I can't imagine, anxiety in the whole family, including the husband, right?
Everybody's
worried about this whole thing. And then it turns out not to be true. If it were 2 years or something, that might be a little bit more in the damage department. That's not to say you couldn't bring the suit. Might be hard to find a lawyer to bring a suit against a doctor. Very expensive to sue doctors, and unless there's some money at the end of that case, most lawyers don't want to take a case like that. Yes. But do you have a case? Probably the answer is yes from a legal standpoint.
And you have reason to be thankful, too.
Yes. That's when you're glad your doctor committed malpractice.
Yes, how about
he was wrong. Yeah.
He was wrong. Karen Conti's here for about another 13, 14 minutes. If you have a legal question, 312-981-7200. You know, Karen, people will wait as they do every week, and then they'll say, oh, where's Karen? How do they get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me, 312-332-7800, or email me at kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
And you say, you always say email probably best because you can give all the details.
Yeah.
That way when you do finally talk to somebody, you have all the information.
Tell me when it happened, where it happened. That's always important. What county we're talking about, where you live, and as many of the details as you think I would need to know.
Kconti at kcontilaw.com. More with Karen on the other side. It's WGN. Karen Conti's here. She's answering your legal questions. You ask the questions, I push the buttons, Karen answers them. That's how it works. 312-981-7200. Let's get to some of these calls. Barb is on the line. Hi, Barb.
Hi, how you doing?
We are well. What's your question for Karen?
Oh, I didn't have a question. I'm an estate planning attorney. I just wanted to clarify something with that question of the gentleman whose brother had died without a will.
Uh-huh.
And bottom line is, as long as the brother was an Illinois resident, if he had less than $100,000 in his name only in like bank accounts and stocks and things like that, then the brother would just need to do a small estate affidavit. And that's an affidavit. It's a sworn statement, and take that to the bank, and they would allow that money to be distributed according to the heirship. And if the man had more than $100,000 total, the man who passed away, then there'd have to be a probate estate opened.
All right, Barb.
So having a will or not having a will doesn't determine probate. It's the amount.
All right. Well, thank you for the information. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Let's say hi to Pat. Pat, how are you? Welcome to WGN.
Hi. How are you doing?
We're good. What's your question?
Awesome. The reason I'm calling is my daughter, when she was 17, was working at the local kind of fast food place, was leaving on like a, you know, minus 10 degree night. And
are your, hold on 1 second, Pat. Are your windows open in the car?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Is this better?
A little bit. So your daughter was working, okay. And what happened?
Walked out. They were washing the back, you know, the back area where the employees leave with the hose. And it was, you know, one of those really cold nights, and she slipped on the ice and immediately froze them and got a concussion.
Okay.
So a year and a half later, she's still having headaches. We are not normally litigious people. But in February, I just happened to be driving by there, and I saw them outside still hosing the back, you know, the back place where the employees left. And I thought, what the heck? I'm wondering, she's like...
Yeah, it might be too late to bring a workers' comp claim. I also, did you say that she was on her break or something, or was she leaving to go home when she slipped and fell?
She was leaving for the night. It was like 10:30 at night.
Yeah, and that's tricky too, because workers' comp generally is when you're at work, going to and from work. It doesn't cover it. But but if she's still on the premises, that would be like something that a workers' comp lawyer would have to give you some very specific advice about.
Yeah.
Why don't you do this? Why don't you email me, and I will email you the name and contact information for an excellent workers' comp lawyer who is very nice, who is a very good colleague of mine. I refer all my cases to her, and she will answer all those questions for you, just so you know for sure that I'm right, that it's too late or it's not too late to bring some sort of workers' comp claim. Okay?
Oh, yeah, I would love that.
Great.
Good luck, Pat.
It's Kay Conti at kcontilaw.com.
Okay.
That is easy. Thanks, Pat. Bye-bye.
Bye, Pat.
From the 773, I have been seeing a doctor for what he diagnosed as a frozen shoulder. I've had several... it always jumps. I've had several weeks of physical therapy. At a subsequent office visit, he manipulated my arm, causing severe pain. The following MRI showed a torn rotator cuff tendon. I believe the MD did this. I had it repaired recently elsewhere. Is this a case of malpractice?
Yeah, and that's something. First of all, two questions. One is that is there a case, and will a lawyer bring it? Because those are two separate questions. And as I said to the prior caller, sometimes there's malpractice, but there's just not enough damage for the lawyer to justify hiring a lawyer to be an expert and to bring the lawsuit and take the depositions and do all the work that you need to do to win one of those cases, because doctors and hospitals fight very, very hard, and so that it's a long and tedious sort of process. So the question is, can you prove that this torn, I don't know if you said cuff or ligament,
rotator tendon.
was in fact caused by the manipulation? That would be, I imagine, would be a hard thing to prove. If you had prior scans that showed that you didn't have it, and then afterwards you showed that it did have it, then maybe that would be easier to prove. But that would be my first question. Can that actually be proven? The second part of it is, even though this is a terrible thing and it must be horribly painful, and you had an operation, you know, that had to repair it, is there enough financial loss that justifies a lawyer to bring this case? And frankly, unless there's serious damage, like loss of use of an arm or death, unfortunately, or permanent injury or permanent illness, usually lawyers don't bring these cases. They don't want to take them on because there's just not enough money. But I think it's worth it for you to ask those questions of a very competent malpractice lawyer. So give me an email and I'll send it out. I have some people who work in different counties, whether it's in Cook or Kane or Lake County, and I can have them, you know, listen to you and you can run it past them and see if you have a case.
And that email address again is?
That's kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
From the 630, spouse has a trust fund, got trust fund while married to me, keeps that money separate, but files a joint married tax return. In a divorce, am I entitled to half?
Probably not, if you're hearing the facts correctly. If you inherit money or get money into a trust fund at any time before the marriage or even during the marriage, okay, and that money is kept separately in a separate account and it's never commingled with family monies. That means money doesn't go in from the family, the salary doesn't go into that trust fund, it's just kept there separately, then generally speaking, upon a divorce, that spouse, your spouse will be able to keep all of that money.
Okay. There you go. Tom's been hanging on. He's got a question. Hi, Tom. Welcome to WGN.
Hi. How are you doing today?
We're well. What's your question for Karen?
My question is let's say you're in sales, and they set up a goal that you have to sell 12 units, let's say 12 units for the month. After you sell 12 units, you can get some bonus. However, if you do not meet the sales goal of 12 units per month, can they legally dock you X amount of dollars for not meeting that goal?
There's a lot of moving parts to that question, because obviously you can't be paid less than minimum wage. And let me ask you, if they docked you, would you be paid less than minimum wage?
$3 an hour.
Okay, so that's not minimum wage. So they can't do that. That they can't do. Can they take back money that you're given an advance on some of your commissions? And that's certainly, companies are able to take back that advance if you don't meet your sales quota. But certainly you can't be working and not be paid minimum wage. So that would probably be something that would be against the Illinois labor laws, not to mention the federal labor laws. So you could consider filing a claim with the Illinois Department of Labor, the Wage Claim Division, which you go online and you can file a claim. If you're still working there, you might think twice about it because you might lose your job by doing that. You're not supposed to, but employers don't like when you file claims.
Because we work at will, correct?
But the thing to do is just to say to your employer, listen, I heard a lawyer say you can't work for under minimum wage, and that's kind of what you're making me do. You want to rethink this.
Right. Good luck, Tom.
Yeah,
hope it works out for you. And John's been waiting. Hi, John. John?
Hello.
Hey. Hi, John. Yeah. What's your question for Karen?
I have a friend that would like me to be put onto their bank account, and I'm not related to these people at all, and I'm just wondering, is there any legal things that I need to watch out for in having my name on the bank account and being able to write checks and everything?
John, may I ask why this person is asking you to do that?
It's a girlfriend, and she doesn't trust people in her family.
Okay.
She's not married or anything. She's not attached or anything to anybody, but doesn't trust people in her family.
I mean, I don't see any downside in that. If she puts your name on the account and you have signatory authority, that means she's giving you authority to take money out of her account. I mean, obviously, if she's your girlfriend and you like her and you want to be an honest person, you're not going to do that without her consent. But I don't see that there's any downside in that at all. Unless there's some facts here I don't know. I can't imagine what that would be.
Yeah. She's recently had a lot of medical problems, and she's concerned about bills being able to be paid and everything.
Well, and I don't think that's going to help her much, because just because your name is on the account doesn't mean that they couldn't conceivably get a judgment against her and then garnish, meaning glom onto that account and take the money out of there. So if I were you, I just wouldn't put any money in that account, and I wouldn't use that account because you could lose your money then by commingling it with hers. So maintain your separate account. I don't think there's any problem with keeping your name on it, but I don't know that that's going to protect her from any outside creditors.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, John.
All right. Good
Thank
luck.
You.
All right. Well, our time is drawing to an end, but people want to know your phone number. Somebody,
sure.
Somebody said, one of the callers who we said they don't have a computer, so what is your phone number?
Sure. It's 312-332-7800. And may I ask, if you're going to call, I'm happy to have your calls, but give me some information. Don't just say it's Carol from Carol Stream. Just tell me what your problem is. It's a confidential line that you're going to call so that I can get back to you with the answer as opposed to going back and forth and back and forth.
Yes.
Okay.
And what's the email
and
address
the email,
for those who do have
sure,
computers?
It's kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
We will see you again next week.
Happy Easter and happy Passover and happy spring to everyone.
And thank you for that ham sandwich that is now upstairs being eaten by some grateful person. Wednesday, Steve Cochran, 6:40.
That's right.
Perfect. All right. We will talk to you next week. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for being part of the program. Don't forget, tomorrow, Lisa and I will be in for Roe and Anna. Well, Lisa will be behind the glass and I'll be in for Roe and Anna because, you know, I can handle two people's jobs. Doesn't matter to me. So we'll talk to you again tomorrow afternoon at 3. Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. Have a wonderful night.